That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Hey, what's up, Surf Splendor fans? This is your host, David Scales. Welcome back to an all-new show. Huge show today. Perhaps the hugest show that we've ever produced. Huge in terms of just file size and the length of this episode. It's pushing 2 hours. Huge in that there'll be three voices that you'll hear from. Huge in the impact that it will make in your life. Things are about to change. Probably not, but we're excited. Big show just because the Quicksilver Pro was such an interesting event. Scott and I discuss it for the first hour of this show, among other things. But then the second hour of the show, we actually invite PT in. You might know him best as PT, but Peter Townend, the 1976 world champion of surfing, the man himself. He was just in Australia for this event and other things, but he was at this event, the Snapper event, and he chimes in. We wanted to invite him on the show to get his opinion on these things, with not only the insight of having been there, but the insight of having been a world champion and having trained a lot of these young up-and-coming athletes, which he discussed a little bit with the ISA. Interesting dude, really energetic, certainly opinionated. Also, if you hear a laugh coming on from Peter, turn down the volume just a notch. That's your fair warning right now. Very boisterous voice, but thrilled to have Peter on the show. So look forward to that. The other detail, which I discuss in the show, but I want to make sure to drill it down, is I just set up a PayPal account if you'd like to participate in our fantasy surfer game that we're playing and cash prize pool that we're putting together. We're going into Bells. The Bells Beach event starts April 1st. You're welcome to play Fantasy Surfer with us. You can go to fantasysurfer.com, create a team, join the Surf Splendor Club, and there's no charge to join or to play, but if you want to actually gamble on this thing, we're doing $10 per event, so you can contribute $10 to Surf Splendor on PayPal. All that you have to do is search hello at surfsplendorpodcast.com, which is my email address. PayPal allows you to send money to anybody just with their email address. So use that email address to send $10 into that account. I will keep track of all the money that comes in. And then at the end, winner takes all. Whoever wins the Bells event, we will get the distribution of all of everyone's $10 contribution. There's 150 team members, so in theory it could be $1,500 if everybody ponied up, or it could just be $100 if only 10 people pony up. But Scott and I are definitely in, and I'm going to do $10 per event. So $10 for the men's event and $10 for the women's event. And one other thing that's super important is to include your fantasy surfer name in your payment. So there's an option to leave a comment with the payment. Just make sure that you give me your fantasy surfer name, because I know a lot of people aren't using legitimate names. They're handles, essentially, made up names. And I want to be able to pay the correct person when this whole thing's over and done with. You get it. I don't need to over explain this situation. It's pretty simple, straightforward. What would you do if you were the treasurer? That's what I'm trying to do. So help me out. All right. Oh, and one other thing. I created actually a page on surfsplendorpodcast.com that explains everything that I just detailed with clickable links to those sites, fantasysurfer.com and paypal.com, which I'm sure you know how to navigate to without my help, but it's there on Surf Splendor just to be sure and cover all my bases. All right. Thank you, as always, for tuning in. Thanks for all the great feedback with Justin Jay's episode last week. Really good stuff. Beach Grit, I know, posted the episode there. That brought a lot of new traffic. So welcome if you're a new listener. And you can always follow us on social media at Surf Splendor on Instagram, Facebook, blah, blah, blah. All right. Thanks for supporting the show. Thanks for the iTunes ratings. And thanks for sharing it with friends. Without further ado, here we go. I'll be back at the end to sign us off.
Yeah, guy, Dental Line Surf Talk Radio. We're back. David Lee Scales, Scott Bass. Do you mind if I call you David Lee Scales? Do you prefer David Scales?
No, I'll take anything I can get, man.
Really? That leaves it wide open, bro.
Whatever you feel like calling me.
David Scales, ladies and gentlemen. It's March 17th. It's St. Patrick's Day. Oh,
that's
my.
That's right. Yeah, traffic was a little bit lighter on my way in today.
Be careful of drunk drivers. Are you going to get drunk today, David Scales?
I'm not. No. I forewent my opportunity by coming here instead.
Good man.
Is forewent a word, by the way?
I don't think so. I don't think you sound drunk.
I don't think it is either, and I'm sure that we will be getting an email from our English teacher in London, who recently sent us an email about our grammar.
Yeah, our grammar sucks. There's no doubt about it. It's probably not going to get better, so you're just going to have to deal with it. That's the bottom line. I make up words that don't exist. You just did.
But it translated exactly what I was intending to say, right?
Was that Scott's the one with the bad grammar?
No, but maybe next year we'll see an addition to the dictionary, and that addition will be forewent. Every year they add new words, right? Like bootylicious got added last year.
Forewent and bootylicious seem to be quite on the extreme ends of the scale there.
Yeah, we're not doing ourselves any favors by talking crap about other people through the entire show anyways, you know? So
yeah, well, I don't think that's going to stop.
No, I hope not.
Unfortunately.
I hope not.
Fortunately or unfortunately.
Not when people are behaving the way that they're behaving, as we saw in this Quicksilver Pro event.
Yeah, why don't we get right into that?
We can't not get into it, dude. It's so big.
Yeah, there's a lot to get into.
It's crazy.
The Quicksilver Pro Snap Rocks. Why don't I give you some of my thoughts? And then
I don't know if
I have a full breakdown, but I guess first and foremost, I just want to say congratulations to Philippe Toledo, who surfed brilliantly. He looked like a champion. He surfed like a champion. He was throwing away nines in the final.
Combo Julian.
Yeah, he surfed good. Julian surfed real well throughout the event. And of course, it was in a surprising event. The lack of waves sort of overshadowed the whole event. You know, mm-hmm. I think when you think about this event, you go, too bad, crappy waves. Oh, yeah, Philippe won. You know?
Well, they had 11 lay days. That's worth noting. And they had to extend the waiting period by 2 days just in order to get contestable surf.
Well, the interesting thing about that, about extending the waiting period, is it could be argued, and it was argued, that we should have this event at Duranbaugh. There's fun, punchy beach break just right next door on the other side of the jetty there. I heard through well-placed sources in Australia that there was much talk about having the event, moving it down the street there to Duranbaugh and running the event. And the WSL, according to my sources, and of course you can't get anything out of the WSL, mm-hmm. communications-wise, they're off the radar. But my well-placed sources tell me that the WSL did not want to move to Duranbaugh because they knew that their two top guns as far as ratings, which are Kelly Slater and Mick Fanning, were up against two of the really, red hot aerialist guys that were going to that you could perceive doing really well at Durango in Dane Reynolds and Jack Freestone.
Correct.
So in round two, Mick was facing Dane Reynolds, Kelly Slater facing Jack Freestone. And the idea of losing those two guys, Slater and Fanning, to those two young upstarts, not necessarily young, at least in Dane's case, but aerialists, and potentially losing ratings, which is what they're grasping for right now, was too much for them to move the event. Now, some people will tell you, oh, it's much more than that. Actually, Durambaugh is in the state of New South Wales, and there's a big permitting issue between Queensland and New South Wales, which is actually, although there's some truth to that, the WSL would never even have thrown it out there that we may be moving to Durambaugh if they couldn't. And we've all known that they can. And certainly there are some permitting issues and they want to hold it in the state of Queensland. They probably get more funding that way or something.
It's just additional expense to move the contest site, period. And then
it's not the expense as much as it is the permitting issues and the politics. There's politics there that you and I don't know, but that does exist. But my point is that that's not a valid argument because they would move it to Durambaugh if they had to. They have done so in the past. It's been done. So the argument that they can't do that because of politics is a moot point. What I'm hearing is that they didn't want to lose Kelly or Mick in round two and thereby lose ratings.
Okay. So
again, alleged and all through absolutely. A well-placed surf journalist in Australia who's really close to the situation.
Okay, so here's the deal, dude. Durambaugh actually had really fun waves. There was free surf footage coming out throughout all those lay days of Durambaugh. And in that footage, these younger guys were the highlights of the show. You know, Dane, Jack, and some of the other guys. And so all of that, Bill, adds kind of to the fodder that you're talking about. I'm not a conspiracy theorist. The picture that you're painting now and that we paint sometimes on this show is that there's some evil puppeteer behind the WSL pulling these strings to make us all dance, you know?
Oh, just wait. We're going to get into the evil puppeteer.
So that's the way that we always paint it. I'm questioning you just with all your inside industry knowledge.
Yeah.
Is that the way it is? It could all be bullshit.
Just call it right now. Everything I'm saying could be total bullshit.
Of course it can. You've already said that. But what I'm asking you as Scott Bass is, does it appear to be that way to you?
It does.
There is a puppeteer who's making these decisions?
Why wouldn't you hold it a Durambaugh if you had in the past? And you've got killer punchy beach breaking guys busting aerials.
Because we don't want the World Tour to run in punchy beach breaks, period.
Well, it runs at Brazil.
So we have one punchy beach break on the list. We'd rather have a long right point break. If all things were A-plus conditions, the long right point break is crappy. But the Durambaugh isn't A-plus either. Slightly better than the point break. Yeah. But if we can extend the waiting period and get good swell at snapper, I'd rather have good swell at snapper than good swell at D-Bach.
I agree with that. Everybody agrees with that.
Well, that was my answer to your question.
But why not run a couple of rounds?
I'd rather run the whole event at good snapper if that's a possibility.
First of all, it wasn't good snapper. It was weak, soft wind swell. Even in the final, that's not real snapper.
In hindsight,
snapper rocks, guys are getting barreled behind the rock.
In hindsight, we know that now. But when you're planning the event and you see swell coming, and that swell that was forecasted got pushed back a couple days, it was hoping to be there within the waiting period.
Many people knew that the swell wasn't going to arrive. I sent you something a week before going, dude, just look at the models. It's not going to show up.
But like I'm just saying, in hindsight, that's all crystal clear. But I'm giving you the argument for what the WSL could have been.
Let me add to my conspiracy, if you want to call it that. I think that's too strong a word.
No, I'm not. I'm just saying.
Let me add to it that the some of the players involved in round two were also saying, hey, we don't want to hold it at D-Baugh.
Meaning Kelly and Mick?
Maybe. I don't have proof of that. I'm just saying people in round two.
Dane and Jack Freestone?
Other people in round two, some of the competitors in round two were
guys who would perform better at the point break.
Yes. Yeah. We're going, you know what? It'd probably be better. And of course, I'm hearing the WSL guys are going, yeah, no shit. I agree. We don't want to, you know.
Yeah.
Now, again, this is all alleged and it's parking lot fodder. It's what this radio show is, you know. Take it for what it's worth. But I think there's some meat on the bone.
I think there's meat on the bone as well. Here's my devil advocate from a different angle.
Sure.
Is that you read those stats, the web viewing stats in our last show about which heats get the most views.
Yes.
And it's Kelly Slater's heats, and it was Chopu's final last year, you know. The women get the lowest views. I would argue that it's pretty short-sighted for the WSL to keep hitching their wagon to Kelly forevermore. Like, hey, we're gonna push him through heats. We're gonna put him in the best conditions that suit him because he gets the most views. I think they're underestimating the value of Jack Freestone's viewability and Dane Reynolds' viewability, especially considering Jack Freestone and Alana Blanchard being like the it couple. You know what I mean? Like, they could play up that angle, and especially if Jack was able to dethrone Kelly, and then they get behind Jack and promote and push him properly. They could really diversify.
Here's the problem with that. You're absolutely right. And by the way, I'm sure that there's players in the WSL that see exactly what you and I see. They see that we need to change of the guard. But right now, they need a major sponsor. So let's just say you're going to like Colgate or Palmolive or Ford Motor Company. And when you go in there to pitch the WSL and you're like, hey, we got this killer new league. We're killing it. The first thing they're going to say is Kelly Slater involved? Because that's the only guy they know. They're probably saying, is Laird Hamilton on the team? You know, like, they don't know shit.
Yeah.
So they're going, is Kelly Slater? You know, and so from that angle, from selling their product, Kelly's got like a 3-year contract with the WSL, I found out. Like, he has to be there.
I didn't know that.
Might be the last or the second to last year of it. Yeah.
That's juicy.
Yeah. So, the reason is that you can't sell your new league without the number one surfer in the world.
Wait,
on tour
break this
not.
Down. Yeah. Do they pay him as part of the
contract? I don't know.
Dude, you got to find this stuff out.
Dude, I'm
call
just,
somebody
I,
right
I
now.
I only go to so many parking lots to get this information. I only suit up at so many places.
Man, that's good.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Now, again.
Okay, so I agree with you. That is probably what's happening. Their back is against the wall. They're running out of money. It's a last-ditch effort. They got to hang on to Kelly because he's worked for them in the past. They can't make new marketing decisions at this point in the game. However,
since we're going down this track, we need to go down this track.
Tell me, dude, we need
to stop a little bit. And
tell me. There's so much to discuss.
So, since we're going down the WSL track line here instead of the contest
itself.
We'll
come back to the contest.
Look, a listener sent me some information that he found on the internet. I did some digging as well. I sent it to you. I tried to boil it down here. I'm going to boil it down as best as I can.
Good luck.
There's a guy named John Marshall.
Wait. Intrigue, scandal. It involves Monica Lewinsky. This story.
I didn't even include Monica Lewinsky.
But we got to pitch it. I mean, we could create a whole show based on this scandal alone. We really could. So just.
Okay, so there's this guy named Jonathan Marshall, right? He's a lawyer. He's the executive vice president and the general counsel of the ASP, the WSL. He's Paul Speaker's right-hand man. Paul Speaker's basically the president of the WSL. So these two, John Marshall, Paul Speaker, sort of joined at the hip, if you will. Some of this online research revealed that John Marshall was also the chief operating officer and the lawyer for RKO Pictures from 2001 to 2006. Where, as it turns out, beginning in 2003, Paul Speaker was the president of RKO. So Marshall and Speaker together at RKO Pictures, huge success. They grew the company. I don't know if you could say they, but while they were there, the company grew tenfold. Big distribution.
Hollywood Pictures, basically.
Yeah, Hollywood Pictures. Great success together. Prior to that, however, the relationship between Paul Speaker and John Marshall goes back to 98, where Paul Speaker and Marshall were again teamed up with an independent entertainment company, excuse me, called The Shooting Gallery, that produced such Academy Award winning films as Sling Blade.
Love it.
Billy Bob Thornton.
Mustard on My Biscuit.
Yeah, 1996, and another movie of a much success, You Can Count on Me, in the year 2000. So The Shooting Gallery, you would say on the surface, was a success. They had these great movies. However, during the time that Paul Speaker and John Marshall were at The Shooting Gallery, that company went spectacularly in a downward spiral to bust, and they were sued. And I'm going to quote from some of the lawsuit terminology here, but in the lawsuit it says that The Shooting Gallery during this time period became more focused on fast profits and expansion of new media endeavors than good old-fashioned filmmaking. They had a radical philosophy change from being a tightly run, fiscally conservative company that watched every dime to turning around and trying to create a vast dot-com company. So this was during that time, right? 98, when they were sort of lured by the sexiness of, hey, .com, let's go crazy. And they did go crazy.
That is hauntingly familiar.
Yes. And
the sexiness of our sport.
Yeah. So In 2003, Jonathan Marshall was a defendant in a lawsuit. So the Shooting Gallery just went, it blew up.
Right.
They lost tens of millions of dollars.
Well, they earned tens of millions of dollars and somebody lost tens of millions on the other end, right?
Basically, they went bankrupt.
Shooting Gallery went bankrupt. I'm sure Marshall and Speaker did okay.
I don't know about that. Okay. But I'll just say this, that John Marshall was a defendant along with a number of other Shooting Gallery defendants, but not Paul Speaker. He was not a defendant in this lawsuit.
Got it.
The Shooting Gallery was sued by banks because the Shooting Gallery, including John Marshall as a defendant, misled the banks by preparing and submitting a series of false and misleading financial information documents regarding, among other things, the Shooting Gallery's solvency, their collateralized assets, even its viability, all of which portrayed the Shooting Gallery as this highly solvent and solid financial company experiencing financial growth. They misrepresented and concealed information to the tune of $20 million credit extension that was given to them by the banks. The banks turned around and sued them, and that's what this lawsuit was about. And here's a quote, another quote from that lawsuit. Not only were the dependents and the defendants' financial representations false, but throughout the entire credit relationship, the Shooting Gallery was either insolvent or in the vicinity of insolvency. Now, Marshall and others were also sued in another case, in bankruptcy court, in an attempt to recover the $30 million in losses by the trustees of the Shooting Gallery. In other words, the backers of the Shooting Gallery were trying to get back some of their monies, right? Among other things, the lawsuit claims that Marshall and the defendants simply headed to the exits, failing to put the company into bankruptcy, but also failing to preserve the Shooting Gallery's books, their records, their assets. And one took steps to prevent employees and did not take steps to prevent employees who were fired en masse via an email without final paychecks from damaging the Shooting Gallery property, upending file cabinets, destroying or removing the Shooting Gallery computers and records, all of which substantially impaired the value of the debtors' estates.
Sure.
All said and done, in 2001, an LA Times article stated that the Shooting Gallery lost over $70 million. The Shooting Gallery creditors lined up around the block to sue them. 45 have already sued the Shooting Gallery, ranging from banks and law firms to former employees, former film associates, landlords, leasing companies, even the mother of the Shooting Gallery executive, C.J. Fellini, who lent the company $500,000.
Wow.
So in light of, you know, what we said last time about the great series of articles that Stu Nettles put out there about who's really watching the ASP, how are they going to sell this thing? It's scary to think that these characters who have in the past been sued for misleading, misrepresenting numbers and data. In light of that, this seems to be pertinent information that this listener sent us. This guy dug up a lot of information. By the way, it didn't take long. All you do is a quick search. But it certainly can be stated that, you know, although Marshall and Speaker have great success at RKO in the mid-2000s, before that, at least Marshall was sued along with many other defendants for some sketchy stuff that's scary that seems like we're in the middle of right now, where the WSL is trying to put lipstick on a pig and trying to go, hey, we're great, you know, and look, the writing's on the wall. Like, you know, this thing costs $165 million a year to run and they need sponsorship.
Yeah.
And they pulled away from YouTube because YouTube shows you how many people are actually watching it.
Yeah. It's really pretty ominous, actually. It's pretty shockingly similar, the initial layout we've got this sexy sport that has a lot of marketability, basically, that nobody's really been able to fully actualize. And these suits who've made a lot of money in a different industry can come over and kind of woo us and show us how they can turn a lot of eyeballs on us and help profitability and all that sort of thing. But then a year into it, none of those goals are being met. And
well, I would say that, look, the production quality is good. Like, they've done a lot from the fan's point of view. If you didn't know any of this backstory, you're like, okay, they're doing good. They're trying, you know, it's on, you know, yeah. Okay, whatever, you know, like,
yeah,
you know what I mean? But because our little community, the surf world's so small, everybody knows everybody.
Yeah.
And it, you know, so a lot of this stuff's come to light, not the least of which is Stu Nettle's great series of articles. So because right. we have that information, we do now look at it with a different pair of glasses. I'll be the first one to raise my hand and say, I sat at dinner with Paul Speaker and listened to his keynote address a couple of years ago at SEMA. And I was on board, man, and I still am on board. I hope he pulls it off, you know? And I was wooed. He's charming. He's smart. He can get up there and sell you the best. You know, he could sell. He was. I was in. I was all in. I'm like, this guy's going to do it,
yeah.
you know? And maybe he still will. But, you know, this John Marshall revelation of sort of these bad dealings, you know, it's a little bit scary is all.
That's not the first revelation either. The problem is we've been hearing rumors for the last 12 months about other things that are problematic along the way, you know, and then articles come out that they're operating at Jake Howard's article from Stab. Were they operating at a $35 million loss or $65 million
well,
loss?
I heard 65. Well, that's not from Jake's article. I heard 65 from somebody who was close to the situation.
Right. But no, but a couple of months ago, Jake did put out that article that said that.
Oh, okay.
Well.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, we're hearing this. The thing is rumors bubbling up from a lot of different sources, from a lot of different angles. It's not just, you know, and like you said, it is a pretty small industry. So I don't know, man. It's pretty scary. What is worst case scenario? Let me ask you that.
I've heard that worst case scenario is, well, no one really knows, right? Because Ziff, this millionaire, billionaire guy, is just throwing money at it. So it's not like...
Ziff is not an idiot.
No, I agree. But what I'm saying is it's not like there's a bunch of investors, like public investors like you and me, like there were with these entertainment companies, where they're going, hey, I need some ROI right now. Who knows? I guess what I'm saying is we don't really know the worst case scenario because we don't know when Ziff's going to stop funding it.
Okay, worst case scenario.
I've heard that Portugal could be the worst case scenario. And again, this is all parking lot fodder.
Yeah.
But I've heard that, you know what? I mean, if you give them, because you figure Portugal is like 2/3 of the year, you know, and so you got to think maybe Ziff's going, look, you got 8 months to get your shit together or mm-hmm. it's over. But again, and you know, what's interesting too is behind this, like they built this insane facility in Santa Monica. They did a New York Times or an LA Times article on how bitchin' they're. That's kind of scares me. That's like pig on the lipstick stuff, you know, like lipstick on the pig yeah. stuff. You know what I mean? Like,
so worst case scenario, Ziff pulls out his money. You're saying around Portugal time. What happens to the WSL at that point? Does the contest still happen? If it happens, is it broadcast on the internet? Like, does
I think at that time it's pennies on the dollar, so, and Vans and Red Bull and those companies come in and bid for it and just buy it, and you know, buy it for a penny on the dollar. And you know, Vans probably runs the Triple Crown through the season, and then they're, you know, all the major players hooey up and go, how do we do this? You know, and who knows? But you know,
it looks
if
like
you go to downthelineradio.com, you'll see the Ultimate Surf League. My why do you laugh? Why
that is because your explanation last time was hilarious.
Yeah, but it's much clearer now. I caught a lot of shit for my explanation.
I like that
horrible.
Even after your explanation was awful, you went home and actually took the time to like break it
I
down.
I did. I was ashamed.
And then anybody who said anything negative, you just send them a link to your text description.
Yeah, just I
as if anybody's gonna read it.
I even sent them the explanation. But anyway, maybe it's the Ultimate Surf League, you know, but
okay. So here's the way it looks to me. Red Bull seems perfectly positioned. They're yes. a marketing company.
Yes.
This is, fits what they do already. All of their infrastructure is already in place.
Yes,
they have RedBullTV.com.
Yes.
On Saturdays, they have Red Bull TV on NBC here
yes.
in California. So I could see Red Bull swooping in, like you said, pennies on the dollar. All of a sudden, Portugal is a Red Bull event streaming live through their media player and completely branded with all Red Bull everything.
Yep.
They have more money than anybody.
It's a Red Bull tour.
It's a Red Bull tour.
Yeah.
Is that what we're looking at?
It's probably going to happen. That's the worst case scenario for the WSL. Best case scenario is those guys step up, their sales force moves in, and somehow or another they get a major sponsor that's willing to throw, you know, a 4-year, 3-year deal together that says, look, by the end of 3 years, you know, are we going to be on NBC, some affiliate of NBC Sports? You know, they've got all these little,
yeah.
you know, small stations, small channels.
Right.
Who knows? But
yeah. Interesting and scary, dude. I really hope that.
What about Monica Lewinsky? You brought Monica Lewinsky up. What's going on there?
So was it Marshall?
Yeah,
Jonathan, the attorney.
Yeah.
Who had a relationship with Monica Lewinsky back when she was at the height of her fame? Basically,
yeah, like 2 months after the Clinton affair broke out.
The Clinton affair broke out, and she was riding high or riding low. I'm not sure how, but she was in the public
Monica
eye.
Lewinsky had a sexual affair with President Clinton in the Oval Office.
It's the first I've heard of this. What?
Yeah. Just to clarify in case there's anybody that doesn't know. And so she was, and then I guess a month after that or something, she did the big Barbara Walters interview on ABC, which got like the most viewed ever.
Yeah.
And then about, I guess like a few months later, this Jonathan Marshall, lawyer guy that works with Paul Speaker was, I don't know if he was dating her, but he courted her, or they went out on a date.
When she was at the top of her fame, she's walking red carpets, going to movie premieres, and there's somebody on her arm. This guy was the guy who was on her arm at the movie premieres because he was working in Hollywood at the time too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's neither here nor there, but funny.
It's just like pop culture anecdote, you know?
Yeah. By the way,
so back to Quicksilver Snapper, actually, to the actual event.
Okay, back to the actual event. So they ultimately didn't run at D-Baw. They ran at Snapper. They extended the waiting period for 2 days, and then they basically were forced to run in those last 2 days. The first day of which really was mediocre. It was slow. It was waist high at best.
It was better at D-Baw. Thank you very
much. Probably better at
D-Baw. Why not move it?
And then the final day, they actually got some waves, which you're saying wasn't classic Snapper, but it was still definitely contestable.
It was contestable. But I mean, if your argument is we want to see the best surfers and the best waves.
It's not my argument. You said, why wouldn't the ASP do that? And I said,
would you rather
see
guys boosting massive airs at Punchy Beach Break? Or?
I personally would. I was just giving you what their argument could have been. Before we actually jump into those last 2 days, prior to the 11 days, right after we recorded our show last time, the very next day they ran women's day two.
Yeah.
Freaking, it was awesome, dude.
Yeah.
It was like arguably the best day of women's surfing I've ever seen. It was the day when...
I can't believe you watched it.
I'm going to let you jump on that grenade, dude. It was awesome.
I'm sure it
was. I'm championing women's surfing.
I love women's surfing.
You just laughed at
him. No, I just laughed at you for watching it. It has nothing to do with...
It's the Quicksilver Roxy Pro, dude.
I know.
How could you not watch it? What are you watching?
I have stuff to do, you know?
I have stuff
to do, too. I can only dedicate so many hours to pro surfing on the web.
If you love women's surfing, how's your fantasy surf team for your women?
I don't even have a fantasy surf team.
Exactly. You don't love women surfing.
I do love surfing with women.
You hate women and children. Just say it.
I don't, but I've got a Bethany Hamilton take for later.
Okay. Well, no joke, though, dude. That day, too, women surfing was the best competition
I've
ever seen.
You were sending me
Silvana Lima was killing it, which she was my Duke last time.
She's
the
greatest story. She's the greatest story right now for the women's tour. She needs to be excavated.
I love it.
Rags to riches, rags to rags. Like, she's still broke.
That's
right?
True. That's true. She sold her house. She sold her car just to go back on the tour.
I think that's awesome.
Crazy. And her post-heated interviews are as interesting and fun to watch as Glenn Micro Hall's.
Why? What does she do? What does she say?
Her voice is super high-pitched. Oh. She speaks at a million miles an hour.
Oh, really?
English is her second language, but that's really the least of it.
So
like,
you're
it's
saying
just,
she speaks better than you and I?
It's just hilarious. Yeah. She speaks better than Strider. Let's put it that way.
Okay, well.
Oh.
Whoa. Ding, yeah. Ding, 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 ding.
So anyways, go check
is
out.
Is it just me, but it seems like Strider like just like gulps in a big chunk of breath and just rolls, and whatever comes out of his mouth, he's just like not sure what's going to come, but it just like he just keeps going no matter what.
And I don't think that he accurately delivers a single sentence in anything that he says. There's always kind of fumbles and foibles throughout.
Yeah, which I've been known to do many
times. It's fine. I'm like I said, stones.
It's almost become a caricature, though. It's almost, you know, like,
yeah.
It seemed like some of the other broadcasters were kind of making light of it almost.
They
like,
are.
Oh, we love his energy.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. Which he does have good
He's
energy.
He's a great guy. Look, I'm not here to
no
beat
question.
Up Strider.
But it's the opposite of what the WSL was really pursuing, which is like professionalism and, you know, he's just all passion and like spewing it.
Yeah.
Which is fine. But anyways, that day two women surfing is way overshadowed by the 11-day waiting period and the last couple days of competition, but it was insane and it's worth noting.
Yeah.
So back to the event, dude. What else do you have from the event?
Well, what's interesting post-event is there are 5 Brazilians in the top 10 right now. Gabriel Medina is not one of them.
Insane. So do you want to talk about Gabriel's hiccup?
Yes.
What happened?
You're usually better at breaking these down, but my, you know, take on it is he was in this heat with Micro Hall. There was an interference. He clearly interfered with Michael Hall, in my opinion. Michael Hall paddled out to him and probably dropped a couple F-bombs, and they had F-bomb exchange out in the water, which is fine.
Yeah.
After the heat, Peter Mel got Gabby and got him on camera, and they were talking, and Gabby spoke from the heart and basically said, you know, and he got a little heated, and I've heard two versions that all he was doing was repeating what Michael Hall said to him, and then I've heard the what I kind of got out of it was he was basically saying, hey, if you do that again, I'm gonna kick your ass.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you exactly what he said.
Okay.
I watched it. So that event, by the way,
I watched it too, and I there's two different interpretations.
Okay. Well, first of all, Glenn Hall outsurfed Gabriel Medina. That's the biggest story.
Thank you. He did. Actually, it's the story that got that no one that
because of all this other stuff, it got overlooked.
Yeah.
Glenn Hall outsurfed Gabriel Medina, and Glenn Hall, talk about rags to rags.
Yeah.
Glenn Hall broke his back in Fiji I think it was 2 years ago now. So it took him 10 years to qualify for the tour. He finally qualified midway through, broke his back in an event, had to sit out the rest of the season, campaigned for a wild card, which he didn't get because there was two other injuries that have main sponsors who contribute dollars to the tour who they gave the wild cards to, even though Glenn was more deserving, in my opinion. So he had to sit out last year. They finally gave him a wild card this year, so he's back. And in the first event of the season, he dethrones our current world champ, the superstar of our sport. So that's the story.
That's bravo, a great story.
Bravo to Glenn Hall.
Absolutely.
So in that heat, Gabriel, who's known for being antagonistic when it comes to paddling for waves, there was an issue with CJ Hobgood at Bell's last year, you'll recall.
Yes.
And so Gabriel's antagonizing Glenn through the heat. And Glenn even said there was an earlier instance where Gabe paddled in front of Glenn. Glenn expected the judges to call a paddling interference on him, and they didn't. So Glenn was like, all right, screw it. I'll just have to outsurf him this heat. Well, then later, Glenn had priority, and he was off on the shoulder paddling into a wave. Gabriel, who was deeper in position for the wave, paddled to kind of try to, I guess, intimidate Glenn off the wave. Glenn go ahead and just goes on the wave, and Gabe almost like bodyboards into Micro when Micro's going to get up, and Gabe basically tries to pull out behind Glenn from a bodyboard kind of position, but it looks like he either hits Glenn or tangles in Glenn's leash, I think is more likely. So when Glenn's paddling in to stand up, he gets tangled and falls. His hands slip off the rail and he falls on takeoff.
Yeah.
So the judges called that an interference. Glenn, I think, surfed another wave or something, but when he paddles out, you can see that he actually confronts Gabe about it. Gabe kind of ignores him. Glenn goes on to win the heat because of the interference call. They come in, they interview Glenn after the fact, and Glenn's like, yeah, we exchanged words, but it was no big deal. I'm just glad to be here, and he's really polite and kind about it. He's psyched to win the heat. Pete then goes and interviews Gabriel Medina. Gabriel basically just says, look, I'm upset, and there's three bad calls that were made.
Yeah.
Number one, KP, Kieran Perreault, the commissioner of the tour, he did an all right job, but hopefully he'll get better at his job because he called this event off for 11 days, and now he's running it in crappy conditions. So hopefully KP will get better at his job. Number two, the bad call was that priority call. This is a brand new rule that they just instituted, and I guess I'll have to learn the new priority rules. Number three, next time Glenn Hall says F you to me, and then that's when Pete jumps in. So it seemed like Gabriel to me was going to say, next time Glenn Hall says F you to me, I'll teach him a lesson or something those lines. But Pete jumps in before Gabe can finish the sentence. And then they cut away from it. And
well, let's address number one, right? Kieran Perreault.
Okay.
I mean, look. He probably wanted to run in a D-ball, you know what I'm saying? But it's out of his hands. There's only so much a commissioner can do.
If there's no waves, there's no waves.
Like, that's stupid, right?
So it's not KP's fault.
So should he be fined for that?
Not for calling out KP.
No, not for calling out the commissioner's call.
No, I don't think he should be fined for that.
So you can talk negatively? Would you characterize that as negative commentary?
I would say it was, yeah.
So you can commentate negatively about the commissioner of the WSL.
You should be able to.
You should be able to.
If that's your opinion.
Okay.
The part two.
Priority rule.
They just instituted this priority,
It's for him. They made this rule because of something he did last year to beat Durbridge.
Okay, what was that? Do you remember?
PT will be able to. PT is going to be on the show later.
Oh, by the way.
Yeah, by the way, Peter Townsend is going to be here in a little bit, and we're going to chat with PT about this. But PT will tell you exactly what went down, but it is a rule change that happened because of something that that Gabriel did to Bede.
And here's my issue is that, yes, Gabriel Medina, our world champion, you should learn the priority rules.
Absolutely.
You're a freaking idiot sitting here claiming, oh, maybe I should learn the rules.
So he's called out the judges. Should he be fined for calling out the judges?
No.
Okay, so you can call out the commissioner of the WSL and you can call out the judges of the WSL on a live broadcast. All of them are allowed to do that.
I think you should be able to. Okay. If you disagree with their decision, I think I'm entitled to call you an idiot if you don't know the rules of your own sport.
Right.
Because here, when they pitched back to the booth with Ronnie, 1 second later, Ronnie explained that priority rule.
Well,
so the knowledge was there. Like, obviously, Ronnie learned it.
I know it's there. Yeah. And you're right. He should. But back up a little bit. Because in other sports leagues,
okay,
like the NFL, coaches get fined. For commenting negatively or questioning the referees.
Okay.
And so I'm just saying, look, if WSL wants to be like a sports league,
I don't know.
I would suggest, look, it's bad for your brand if the competitors in your brand are saying the brand sucks.
Right.
That's basically what they're saying. And he said it twice. He's saying the commissioner sucks. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's a little harsh. He's saying, he's talking, you know, he's not uplifting the brand, which is kind of like biting the hand that feeds you.
Right.
And he's done it twice now against the judges and the commissioner on a live WSL broadcast.
Well, look, if they want to fine him about that, those rules have to be in place.
I'm not sure
prior
if they should. Well, for sure. And I think they are. I mean, in the past, you couldn't.
No, I don't think what you're. I mean, people have been fined in the past, but it's when somebody uses a profanity.
Well, he did that too. We haven't even gotten there. So then he did that.
So if you're going to fine him, the fine should come because of the profanity, which is why Bobby got fined, Freddie got fined in the past.
Yeah. Jeremy Flores had a big fine last year for doing something.
Well,
he ran up to the judges.
He pounded through the door
right.
in the judge's tower.
Right.
So I think that is misconduct.
Yeah.
Well,
anyway, I put that on my Facebook. I don't know if you saw it. I basically asked my Facebook followers, should Gabby be fined? And it like ran. In fact, Kelly Slater chimed in on it.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
What did he say?
He basically called me out. He said, no, Scott Bass, you're wrong. I don't know. Let's pull it up. I don't have my. Anyway, he basically said, look, give him a break. He's a good kid. He made a mistake. You know, let's move on from this. He was just being passionate. That's basically what Kelly said.
Yeah. That's
and
nice.
A lot of people did that. A lot of people said that. But then there's a lot of people that sort of took the line of, which is the one I'm taking, is hey, all of your competitors, there should be like a policy, you know, and this is the policy. And the policy is it's not good for you and it's not good for the WSL if you speak negatively about us. We're going to have plenty of critics. God forbid we got Scott Bass and David Scales on the podcast talking shit about us all
Who's
day
David
long.
David Scales, by the way?
David Lee Scales. Oh, okay. You know what I mean? Like there's plenty of people out there that are going to nitpick the crap out of this because that's what we do for fun.
Yeah.
But it shouldn't be the competitors who are the professional surfers who are trying to uplift the WSL. They shouldn't be the ones, especially, you know, when we're on a live broadcast with a WSL microphone in your face.
Right. Okay. I fully agree with that in theory, but I just want more of my world champ. We're so used to having Kelly, who's the perfect mascot for our sport.
That's the wrong word.
Ambassador.
Thank you.
He's the perfect ambassador of our sport. And so he's well-spoken. He's intelligent. All those things. And
I agree. We're all let down by Gabriel's lack of professionalism.
It's
like,
dude, I don't need you necessarily to prop up our sport, Gabriel, but I at least want you to not be so affected by, you know, like, or don't blame these exterior circumstances. You lost to Glenn Hall, period. That's what happened. Don't come back in the booth and then start blaming KP, start blaming the judges, and say you're going to get in a fight with the guy who beat you.
Yeah, there was a lot of cryberry commentary.
It's pathetic.
Crybaby commentary on the Facebook thing. You know, like, you know, that's not professional. The three things that he did are not professional.
And
even when you have on occasion sense that Kelly Slater was going to say was disappointed, he did it. He was smart enough to go about it in a really, you know, in a manner that was sort of skirting the edges of what he really felt, but you could sense that he felt bummed about something, but he was smart enough to massage it in the right way.
I just want the best Gabriel Medina and the best surfing that we can get, and I'm disappointed by his feeble-mindedness. That's what it showcased.
I'm not surprised. Are you surprised by it?
No.
He's only 18. A lot of people are saying, look, he's 19, he's 18. Give him a break.
I agree that is true, but those traits, I think, I mean, maybe maturity helps, but Kelly wasn't exhibiting those traits early on. The things that it takes to become a three-time world champ like Fanning, 11-time world champ like Kelly, it's really a lot more of kind of these internal character traits that you have from your childhood that Gabriel doesn't really seem to be possessing. He possesses unbelievable talent and a lot of drive.
He seems a little entitled.
Dude, it's a little unsettling.
You're not happy with your new world champion.
I'm really not.
I told you so.
I know.
I told you so when you were waving the Brazilian flag last year. I was like, dude.
Dude, if it revitalizes Kelly's passion, that's what I want. And that's what I was... That's the flag.
I think Kelly Tick and passionate is good waves, and I just think that he was, it was lackluster.
Well, here's my question to you is if it is lackluster and they are running in these crappy conditions, they're making decisions like this, they're doing an event at Margaret again, which we all agreed last year was a bad call. Possibly they're going to lose funding. What is Kelly's incentive to stay involved at this point? You know what I mean? Like the top end guys who are used to surfing, like, why stay? These waves are going to...
I don't know. That's a question for him. I really,
that's another one of my concerns.
I think the big thing is he's inspired by the young guys, obviously, right?
But not the young guys surfing waist-high waves. Like, no. I'm sure he's impressed by Felipe, but I don't think that inspired Kelly.
No.
Kelly was thinking about going to Fiji where it was bombing.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't know, I hope he hangs out long enough for the Red Bull Ultimate Surf Tour, though, when they go surf man-on-man two-hour heats.
I think he has a conflict of interest there, too, with his Perps brand.
Maybe.
And so does John Florence with Monster Energy. You know what I mean? Like, that presents so many issues.
Somebody was talking to me about how back in the 80s and 90s, when Tom Carroll was the first pro surfer, I believe, to be solely sponsored by one company. I think it happened in like 88 or 89. He signed a $1 million deal or a $1 million contract with Quiksilver. But back then when you had multiple sponsors on your board, like when you were sponsored by Body Glove and Billabong, it seemed like the surfers had more power because they were more spread out, And now to have many of these surfers just under one brand, you sort of lose your power as a surfer. It's like, I got to toe the company line over here because they're paying me $100,000 a year or whatever it is. Whereas before you're like, I'm getting $500 from him. I'm getting $2,500 from him.
Right.
And I could love him or leave him.
Right.
And it's no big deal because they certainly had, you could argue, more power, which I thought was a great point. Actually, Maurice Cole brought that up last week when I interviewed him. Did you listen to that?
I listened to half of it.
Did you hear what he said about bells?
I didn't get there yet.
I asked him about bells because I was like, look, you might punch me right now. And I'm telling you, I'm not sure bells is a great competitive wave.
What did he say?
I hope I don't misparaphrase him, but he basically said, look, when it's on, it's a great quality wave. It's a difficult wave to ride. A lot of these guys on tour don't know how to ride it good, which makes it a good competitive wave. You do need different boards and equipment for it. Adriano knows how to ride it because he's put in the time there. The guys that know how to ride it know how to ride it. And the guys that – the really good waves are the waves up at Little Rincon that come underneath that line up super fast as you can go all the way through rather than the sort of like softer ball waves that just – sometimes they break, sometimes they don't.
Okay.
But, it's his home spot. He's going to be biased about it. But his biggest point was, what an amphitheater.
Yeah.
What an amphitheater for people to watch it,
Which doesn't do much for us, the web viewer.
Right.
So one thing I will say about the Quiksilver Pro at Snapper was that it was super entertaining to watch. Even though the waves were small, it was highly competitive. Because of all the emotions running high from the lay days, it was super interesting. Like, I thought it was one of the more exciting competitions I've seen in a long... since Pipe, but prior to Pipe, I don't know.
You could sort of sense frustration is what it was, you know? Like, you sense that they were all on edge about it. Like, no one was happy. It was crappy. They were all down. They'd been waiting for 2 weeks. It was never on. It was another lay day. And they were all just, like, tense, which I think showed out right in what Freddie P. did.
Yeah, so Freddie P. lost his heat. By the way, his combined heat total was 1.13.
Ew.
Yikes.
Yeah, maybe that's a record.
Yikes.
That might be a record.
So I might be mistaken, but I think he was surfing against Adriano. And Adriano just stayed busy, got lots of waves. Freddie just waited out the back for a set that never came and just got two waves, a 0.5 and then, you know, 0.63 or something.
Well, his greatest wave was after the heat.
So then after the heat, he's coming in on whitewash and he just starts aiming for the rocks at Little Marley.
We all knew it was coming. He telegraphed it.
And then a rock is there, you know, 3 feet above water, and he basically just... Huntington hops right into the thing and stomps right on top of the rock, kind of try almost like he's trying to rail slide board slide the rock.
Yeah.
And the commentators were just like, oh my god, Freddie's lost it. And the word was that he actually walked straight through the contest zone with his board and his rash guard still on,
screaming
no, straight back to the hotel, went all the way to his hotel soaking wet in his rash guard, took the elevator up to his room with a surfboard, got to his room, and then realized he didn't have his key card on him. So he's standing at the hotel and in front of the door soaking wet, just goes, oh crap. So then he kind of shook it off and goes, all right dude, I'm an idiot, I need to walk back down there with my tail between my legs. And he did. He went back to the event site and was kind of laughing at that point. And the internet kind of drew a Quicksilver logo with, you know, the mountain and a wave Quicksilver logo. And Freddie board sliding the Quicksilver mountain, which is pretty funny. They're calling it Freddie's Rock forevermore.
Yeah, that was one of the lighter moments of the event, right?
It was funny.
Yeah.
The other thing was Kelly. Okay, we got to talk about Kelly's mindset. We've touched on it a couple of times. He lost in round three to rookie
Italo
Ferrer. Goofy foot, Brazilian rookie. And Kelly actually thought that he was in the third heat of the day. And so that morning when he woke up, he thought he was in the third heat of the day. And I think he was in the first. So he showed up to the event site frazzled, not knowing. So he goes out for a 5-minute surf before the event, which he normally doesn't do. Came back in, went out and surfed his heat really poorly. With 7 minutes left, he had priority. He took a crappy wave in to change equipment, to change boards.
Yeah.
So there's a couple things to note here. Why would you take a wave in when you have priority that isn't a set wave?
Yeah.
That shows...
Because time was ticking down.
It shows poor strategy on his part.
Yeah, I agree.
To do a board change when you're losing the heat.
Certainly... I haven't given it much thought, but...
It proved to be a poor choice.
Yeah.
Because he came in, switched on to a Daniel Thompson-shaped board, which we've talked about, the Firewire connection. This actually wasn't a Firewire construction board.
Right.
But it was this little interesting-looking Daniel Thompson board. Paddles it out. We're all excited to see Kelly catch the first wave on the WSL on this Daniel Thompson. No waves came.
Yeah.
So he sat out there for the last few 7 minutes or whatever, didn't catch a wave.
Yeah.
Wasted his priority on a crappy wave. On his less, you know, it was just like so disappointing.
In many ways, you know, how goes Kelly is how goes the WSL.
Very true.
You know, like that in a weird way, those last 7 minutes sort of summed up the event.
Very true. Well, I think that's actually understating the brilliance of Felipe and even Adriano to a...
The thing about Felipe is it was like a coming out. We all knew he had the talent, you know, and it was sort of like a coming out thing. And whether it's at Snapper or wherever it's going to be, it was eventual that he was going to win an event. It just happened to be here. And that's a neat story that was going to happen wherever. But the overall vibe, you know, especially up to that point, you know, prior to round four or whatever, and good waves rolling or contestable waves rolling in was sort of... characterized by those last 7 minutes.
Well, I've got a question for you.
I mean, the board change, you could argue the board change was a metaphor for Durambaugh.
You are so prolific in your older age, dude. You're coming up with these pearls of wisdom.
Not that for 72 years old.
They go deep, dude. I'm expecting you to just be all surface all the time, not coming in with a Kook and Duke and all that sort of business. But instead, you go deep sometimes.
We may have talked about my Kook and Duke already.
Oh, of course we have. That's your new MO.
No, that's your new MO. It could change. You might make it.
A friend of mine posted on at Surf Splendor's Instagram a an interesting thought. He said that he can't remember ever a competitor looking more just dominant than Felipe. Like, who's looked more intimidating in form and dominant than Felipe has? I mean, when Kelly's doing good, like at Tahiti last year and stuff, he looks like the in-form competitor and he looks dominant, but not with the amount of arrogance that Felipe has, which, by the way, is founded. You know, it's not unjust. He's dominating and claiming and owning it, and it's like he looks unstoppable.
Yeah.
And I thought that was an interesting point. Yeah. I haven't seen a competitor look that
it's that's one of the most refreshing things about the entire Brazilian contingent, is that they have this sense of sportsman. Yeah. You know, like to them it's like a sport. Like, right, the idea that it's this groovy lifestyle, and you know what, I'm going to go longboarding today and I'm going to go shortboarding. Like, to them it's like, rip the crap out of it, right, to get points. And right, that's what surfing is. And yeah, I'm going to train to do that, right, you know.
And Felipe's ability in that style of waves, it is unmatched. There's nobody that matches his ability.
Not right now. It's not insane. In 2 foot windswell.
He looks like a video game. Like, if you got the joystick in your hand, that's how you would surf that wave. Like, it's unreal. Now, I got two more slaps across the face for the WSL if you'd like to hear.
Oh me. My God, the poor WSL.
In the quarterfinal heat against Julian and Taj,
yes,
our feed went out.
Oh, I know. I remember I texted you. I was like,
I got multiple texts and Twitter and everything. It's like,
I was like, dude, is your feed bad? Because mine's bad too.
Dude, we've waited 11 days for this event. Now it's a quarterfinal with a guy who ends up making it to the final and a former winner in Taj. And the feed goes out.
I know. That was a heat that we wanted to see too.
Dude, I'm pulling my hair out at that point. It's in.
I was bummed.
So
I was only glad to know that your feed went out as well. Oh, yeah. It was a worldwide thing and it wasn't just my.
Exactly.
My provider.
So that's one slap across the face. I take it as a personal attack, actually.
Yes, I can tell. Dude, it's pissed. You're going to drop a lawsuit. Jonathan Marshall's going to get another one. What happens if you pay per view and that happens? You might have a little class action lawsuit.
My other question is, if this comes down to a Red Bull situation at the end of the season, Red Bull's viewer, their media player, sucks. If you ever try to watch a Red Bull produced content,
a live thing?
No. Well, not only live. I've watched live ones too, but it's like they make the 21-day series, you know? And you go, they don't embed on YouTube. They keep everything in-house.
It's all owned on their
trip. On their own media player.
Yeah.
And the thing sucks, dude. Yeah. It takes forever to buffer.
That's because that's where it is.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it needs to be out there in different points on the web, you know, different places.
Right.
Stashed in different servers.
Mm-hmm.
When you're hiring for a small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role, and there's no faster or effective way than through LinkedIn Jobs. Your time and capital are precious, and there is a powerful resource that can help you focus on what you're good at and integrate people into your team seamlessly to help grow your business. LinkedIn Jobs has created the tools to find the right professionals for your team efficiently and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. Everyone is already on LinkedIn with their resumes and references, and now LinkedIn has designed a hiring platform to connect you with candidates specifically qualified for the job that you post about. More than a billion professionals meticulously organized to connect people by skill set to help us all advance our position. 2.5 million businesses already use LinkedIn for hiring, and 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. It's that fast, easy to use, and effective. LinkedIn Jobs can help you write job descriptions, filter the right person to you, and give you the tools to help you interview them like a pro. LinkedInJobs.com/surf is where you go to post your job for free. Yes, totally free. That's linkedinjobs.com/surf to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
I had another slap across the face for the WSL, but now I can't think of what it was.
And
I
we've slapped them down pretty hard.
I'll
tell you what. I've heard from more than one surfing journalist in Australia that they are peeved at the lack of communication. Just like I ranted last time about the WSL, the lack of transparency for the WSL. The surf journalists in Australia are used to Rabbit and the boys and the ASP kind of just like telling them what's going on, you know. And it's the WSL from a communication standpoint is run like the State Department, you know, or not even that good. You know, it's just it's a one way delivery of like bullet point talking points, and there's no give and take. And it's like, this is what's happening. Goodbye. No, I'm not taking questions. See you later.
Yeah. Which actually,
and they don't respond to any emails.
Which then when all these rumors come out that you've revealed, it just adds fuel to that flame. It's like, if you're not going to tell us anything, then we have no choice.
I'm just going to have to go on parking lot fodder.
Exactly. Okay, here's my other slap across the face. They Instagrammed after Felipe won the next day. They Twittered a photo of Felipe doing this kind of blow tail air and said, Felipe Toledo's club sandwich on a way to a win. That wasn't his club sandwich, right?
Yeah.
Like, we talk about mislabeling maneuvers, and the judges need to know what maneuvers are in order to score them properly. The club sandwich turn, which I talked about Silvana Lima doing in our last show, is like an upside down blow tail through the lip while you're grabbing the rail. Josh Kerr does them. Dane Reynolds, Jeremy Flores. You mentioned Seabass.
Yeah.
Seabass did one in the early rounds. Felipe did a couple. It's this really spectacular turn that's very difficult to do. I know the judges aren't the ones sending out the Twitter stuff, but still, if you're going to usually
that's probably that girl that's on the communications. Like, there's like three people, like there's Dave Proden, somebody else, and this girl. She's probably the one that gets that. And she probably doesn't even surf.
And she, maybe it's an intern situation. Maybe she doesn't get paid. You're just doing it as experience.
It's a problem when non-surfers are running a surf league.
And it's a problem when all of your viewership participates on social media. Almost social media, you know, it's amazing how much of surfing exists on there, more so than a lot of other industries.
Yeah.
Kind of runs on Instagram. And this was a tweet, but it was like, I'm just scrolling through and it's like Felipe Toledo club sandwich. I'm like, whoa, whoever posted this mislabeled it. Oh, it was the WSL that posted this? That was the sickest turn of the event? What? And I actually tweeted back to them and I'm like, try again, you guys, which I don't think they'll even understand. They probably misinterpreted me and thought I actually thought they were talking about a sandwich, you know? But it's just like, it's like, you guys, you're blowing it.
Yeah.
You're blowing it. So in regard to your communication department stuff, that falls in that category. Can we talk about Fantasy Surfer before PT comes in?
Yeah.
Dude, Fantasy Surfer, I set up the PayPal account.
Yeah, well, how did I do?
Better than me.
Really?
I hate to say it, than me. I think we
Everybody's teams blew up.
Well, I mean, wow, things got shuffled.
Yeah.
I mean, really, things got shuffled because a lot of the top guys other than Mick performed really poorly. And a lot of the low seeds, like Matt Wilkinson, came out of nowhere and smashed it. And he was on your team. So, I mean, a really good job to the winners. So real quickly, I sent up a PayPal account. If you want to contribute to the next event, we're doing $10 per event, winner takes all.
Okay.
We have 150 club members, so somebody could win $1,500. Somebody will win money, but you don't have to contribute the $10 if you don't want to play. But if you do, you have an opportunity to win. The way that you do it, go to PayPal, search hello at Surf Splendor Podcast is my email address.
Yeah.
And donate $10 to the men's event if you want, and $10 to the women separately if you want. And there'll be separate pots. There'll be one winner in each event. And make sure that in your note with your payment, you give me your Fantasy Surfer handle. That is the most important thing. If you don't give me your Fantasy Surfer handle, I won't be able to pay you at the end of the event. So, hello at Surf Splendor Podcast. Send money through PayPal. You could just search via the email address.
And who won our first opener?
It's so disappointing, dude. Boogie Board for Life.
How fitting.
Boogie board for Life was the won winner? The men's division.
Of our first event.
With 957 points.
That's a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot. He was number 255 overall in the overall standings.
Good for him. That's a lot.
His team had Fanning, Pupo, Felipe, who won the event, Kolohe, Julian, who finaled in the event, CJ Melling, and Dusty. all of whom lost in round two or three.
Yeah.
So really impressive.
So I guess if you had Felipe Fanning and Julian Wilson, you're...
And Pupo.
And Pupo, yeah.
Because Pupo quarterfinaled or semifinaled, actually.
So what did I have?
You
400 finished, and something?
No, I forget your total. You should provide your own total.
I know, I would. I just didn't bring my computer.
So you and I both finished in the 80s. I think you finished three or four spots ahead of me, which I was so pissed about. I don't even care about losing. I just want to beat you.
Yeah, good luck with that. That ain't going to happen.
You're lucky you put Wilco on your team. And you subbed out. You had CJ. You subbed out CJ for Wilco.
Yeah.
That was the... I was so pissed.
Wilco served great.
Wilco served fantastic. By the way, the women's. Dent won the women's division with 817 points. Bells Beach starts...
Nobody cares about the women.
Everybody cares except you, Scott. You hate women surfing. The Bells Beach, is PT here?
I don't know, but I
gotta... Oh, okay. So the Bells Beach event starts April 1st. So we'll look forward to that start. And like I said, get your $10 in before that April 1st deadline via PayPal. Search hello@surfsplendorpodcast.com. You can participate in both divisions, the men and the women's, if you want, or just one, or not at all. But if you want a chance to win, then you obviously have to contribute. And if the winner of the event doesn't actually contribute to the pot, then, you know, we'll just go down the line. Second place will take it or whatever. So definitely do that.
All right. We are super ecstatic to have a good friend of the show, PT, Peter Townend, 1976 world champion. PT, welcome, my friend.
Bassie, how is it today? It's a beautiful day in Southern California.
It is, huh? We had fun this weekend down at Rincon. I saw you get one of the longest waves on that 11-foot glider, and I was cheering for you. Did you hear me cheering?
That's what that board's all about. That's the Skip Fry impersonator.
Yeah, I was cheering. That was a killer long. And then you looked like, man, I don't think I can paddle back out. I saw you questioning.
I was debating whether I was going to paddle all the way back because I had gone about 300 yards, and I'm going, oh, my God, I have to paddle all the way back up to the point again.
I was disappointed, dude, I got to say. You let me down. Well, we've been talking ASP stuff, and I want to get right into it with you. I know you were in Australia, and first, give me your thoughts on Felipe Toledo and the whole Brazilian contingent. There are five Brazilians in the top 10 right now.
Well, I said after the last year's season when Medina won, which he deserved to be the world champ, I went, you don't want to have a Brazilian in your heat next year because now they all know they can do it. And what's ironic about Snapper already, it wasn't Medina that went to the top. It was everybody else, which just shows you. And actually, the first day I saw Toledo surf at Snapper, I called the shot. I go, this guy's going to win the whole freaking thing. I go, not only was, he's known for his trick surfing, but his rail surfing, he looked like he had the boards dialed in and looked like the board was perfect for the conditions. And it was his rail surfing. It was just unbelievable. And other people were noticing in that. And then, you got somebody like a Wiggly Dantos, who's been a WQS warrior for 5 years, and comes from the same group, but took him that long to get there. And what did he do? He got the semifinals. And, legitimately, it wasn't about any sort of trick surfing. It was power top to bottom on his back end. Those guys are going to be scary. I mean, we'll see what happens. And whether they get the sophomore jinx at Bells, but it depends what the conditions are like at Bells. But they're off to a good start, and I was commenting yesterday to a mate. Just think if by Margaret River there is still five of them in the top 10, and they're going to Rio.
Oh, yeah, insane.
and then I don't want to also forget about Silvana Lima.
Absolutely.
I mean, I said at the beginning of the year, too, just like I said, she's a veteran. She's the oldest girl on tour. She's been off tour for a while. She has no sponsorship. She had to finance her way through the QS to get back there. And I said from day one, this girl's going to be scary.
Right.
And it proved it. First heat she went out, she smacked Steph Gilmore upside the head on a home break.
Yeah. No, I think there's people talk about in sports psychology, like, they can never beat the 5 minute mile or whatever. But as soon as one person does it, it's physically possible. But now somebody's broken through the mental barrier. Now everybody could do it. It's not Tony Hawk doing the 900 or whatever. So I think that might have been what happened with Gabriel Medina. He just punched through the mental block And now everybody, it's like game on. Kelly's not so intimidating anymore, you know?
I just think that it's a phase we're going through in the sport, which is fantastic in my opinion, because finally there's this Latin energy for real right. within the sport. And this has happened in other sports where you get a push from some sort of geographic region of the world, and it's good for the sport because it makes those countries that might have got a little lazy have to go, wow, we need to reevaluate.
Well, Scott and I have talked about that on the show a lot, is that America represents that laziness, you know? We do not have the drive. We've too much too soon. The kids get sponsored early, people get paid early, and there's not the drive that the other countries
have. And I think we've seen that, really, the one that is the epitome of that was Chloe Andino. He got so much hype so early on from the time he was 12, but now we're starting to see the Chloe Andino live up to the potential. He's a different man this year. I mean, he turns up, he's got the goatee going on, he's got the beard going on, he's got the hair brushed back. The old man isn't trailing along at Manly at the Hurley Australian Open. I mean, he was intimidating. He just wasn't going to get beaten. And you could tell it was a different Chloe Andino. And finally, the skills are living up to the hype that we've heard about for 10 years.
I feel the exact same way with Chloe, and I've actually been watching him and hoping that he would fulfill his potential. And going into Manly, he won the one star in Huntington. Going into Manly, he did really well in that, and I thought this would be his year. But his approach is pretty similar to Felipe's, and they actually matched up at this event, and Felipe blew doors on Chloe. It's like everything that we've wanted out of Chloe, Felipe is a better version of, in those type of waves anyways. And it was really kind of disheartening for me as a Chloe supporter to see that happen. Now, what we haven't seen out of Felipe is anything in the South Pacific or anything in Hawaii, which is a place where Chloe's actually made a lot of progress in the last year or two.
And that takes time. And I think in that case, it's a lot easier to bring those skills that are so good in the little conditions up than if you're coming from a Hawaii background and you have to try and bring those skills down.
Good point.
And so, I mean, I'm the epitome of that. I came from Superbank, Kira, small wave upbringing, 4 to 6 feet, and yet I went to Hawaii, and, you know, one of the things I'm most proud of was how successful I was at Sunset,
yeah.
You know, like in the Duke contests and all the events and Waimea and yet I had never ridden any big waves. It's easier to bring those small wave skills up if you've got the heart. You got to have the heart.
Absolutely.
That's the big difference.
Which North Americans have the heart? I just said that North Americans are soft. David and I have talked about it at length. It just doesn't seem like you mentioned Kolohe. He must be on your list as a potential.
Nat Young's in the mix.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Nat Young has more potential than Kolohe to be a world champion. Are there any others on your radar that you see?
Are you including the Hawaiians in this discussion, or are you just talking about mainland?
I like North America in this discussion.
Because the Manese boys in Hawaii definitely have the ability and skills to get there. But, you know, I still go to all these NSSA events and some Surfing America events, and I see the best kids. And it's looking pretty bleak at the moment.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, the kids from Encinitas, the family, Jake Marshall, Cola Pinto in, from San Clemente. I mean, it's hard to tell.
Well, look, I look at him and I'm like, look, it sounds like the Geiselman brothers. You know, like, where are they? You know, like, there's a bunch of these guys that win NSSA open season. Big deal.
Well, there's one big dynamic that's going to change a lot of this is next year in 2016, the ASP World Juniors comes down to 18, and that matches the ISA World Junior Team Program, and that's going to change things from a point of view of how early guys. It used to be this progression: you get on the ISA national team for your country for under 18 for the World Junior Championships, which is the most important ISA event in my opinion. And
of the 7,000 events that they hold?
You know, I mean, it's a proven theory. If you go back to Brazil in 2006, which I coached in, 11 of the people on tour today are from that actual event. I mean, yeah. Julian won and Geordie was second and Jeremy Flores was fourth in the men's alone. And in the juniors, it was Owen Wright and Alejo Munoz. And in the girls, it was Paulina Du, Sally Fitzgibbons, Courtney Conlon. And I mean, it's just proven that that was the way. But next year, the ASP is lowering their age to 18. So what does that do? I think it's going to hurt the ISA junior program, in my opinion, because people are going to go straight to ASP early to try and get in the system, to get through the system, to get to the QS, to get to the CT.
The pro junior events.
The pro junior events come down from 20
to 18.
So you used to go from the world junior team, 2 years in the ASP world junior program, and hopefully you're getting yourself into the QS and into the system.
So kids that were going to be in the under 18 ISA, their world, their national team, they're under 18. They turn 18 and now they go to the ASP. What's different?
No. It means those guys are going to try and get into that system earlier, because now they're going to go, well, it's 18, means I can get in early. I can get into the ASP system earlier by being in the junior program, because you get benefits from being in the ASP world junior program. Right. You get seated into stuff.
So you can be as young as 14 or 15 in the ASP.
It's going to bring the whole thing down.
Yeah. Interesting. Did anyone have any discussion about this? Or
was
all this?
No. I mean, well,
a meeting of Fernando, the minds?
Fernando's up in arms.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're ASP and WSL are head to head on this thing. And, you know, they're going for world domination.
Well, that brings us, you know, David and I had a long discussion this morning about the WSL and its viability as a league. What are your thoughts on that? We basically feel like it doesn't look bright for the WSL unless some big hitter comes. And the worst case scenario is that by the end of this year, some company comes along and buys the WSL for pennies on the dollar because the Ziff brothers are sick of throwing money at it.
Well, first off, I want to qualify that I think they've done an incredible job in the period that they've
done. And we have too. We don't want them to lose.
The eyeballs have been just quadrupled from point of view. Well, just look at the Facebook thing. It went from 400,000 to 500,000 in 1 year. That's a serious freaking increase just in Facebook fans alone. And the ability that they've put it on broadcast TV on Sunday afternoons, I can tell you that is having an effect.
In Australia and Brazil? Where is that?
Well, in Brazil, it's having a huge effect.
Here on NBC.
On ABC.
Tape delayed.
Yes.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. You know, like I go to a family function for the Townend Bishop clan in America, and people that are in that clan from the valley, you know, Simi Valley, that have absolutely nothing to do with surfing, haven't seen surfing on TV in years, know that their relative was a world surfing champ. First family thing I was at, they go, wow, we saw surfing on TV on Sunday afternoon. That's so insane. I actually watched it for a while.
Yeah, all right.
That hasn't happened. That hasn't happened since the Bud Surf Tour on Prime Ticket and ESPN.
Yeah,
and all so they've done a really good job that broadening the scope of creating fans. As good as the webcasts are, those webcasts are insane. We're still talking to ourselves. We're not talking to a broader audience. We're not creating a bigger fan base. It has to go to some sort of network broadcast thing. Now the challenge is that they've increased the eyeballs, maybe not enough yet to get the big players. They have to be able to monetize it. That's the challenge of the WSL. I hope it works. I'm telling you right now, because pro surfing's going to be in a sad state of affairs if it doesn't.
What are your opinions on why it's difficult to monetize, or why haven't they been able to monetize with one full year under their belt now?
It's a simple answer.
What's
it's eyeballs.
Eyeballs.
The eyeballs are still not enough for someone to come write the big check.
Your answer would suggest worst case scenario, because how many eyeballs do they need, and are they going to get there in 8 months?
Are they going to get there before the money runs out?
Yeah.
That's the challenge. Yeah. That's the challenge right there.
Is there going to be another doubling of the Facebook numbers and the?
I think it's the Facebook numbers have to get bigger. I have no idea. I've not seen what the ratings are for those ABC shows, those 1 hour shows. You know, those have been leading in right before the NFL. I mean, they've been prime right in the middle whack of a Sunday afternoon entertainment. Mm. I haven't seen those numbers, so I don't really know. But you know, look, we have Samsung written all over the WSL, but it's only a piece of Samsung. It's not Samsung the Samsung.
Yeah.
It's a piece of Samsung, you know. Yeah. They've got to get somebody that comes in. you know, like a Coca-Cola or somebody Ford that Motor writes Company. The ticket for yeah. the global empire of McDonald's. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But they got to have eyeballs for somebody to sign off on that. Unless in one of those companies or brands you find another Ziff who says, hey, we want to get behind surfing because it's cool. But, you know, then on the other hand, it actually makes me laugh because I get out of the plane a couple of days ago, get out LAX driving along, and I see this giant Verizon billboard for surfing.
Yeah.
there's a disconnect. You see what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, here's a company like Verizon claiming surfing, but they're not contributing to the WSL. There's something.
I was seeing in LA Verizon billboard with Courtney Conlog for a while. Was that the one that you saw?
No, this is a new one. And they had one for Chloe Andino up there for a while too. Okay. And there's a new one since I've been gone 30 days.
Is it just a wave or is there somebody that we know? No.
It's actually a guy surfing with a surfing slogan. I can't exactly remember the wording, but it's right there. As soon as you come out of LAX.
Surfer you recognize though? Or just
it looked
like
it could have been Chloe still, only it didn't have his name on it. You know?
Interesting.
Well, look, we all want the WSL to succeed. It gives us great stuff to talk about, and we're all fans of pro surfing, and we've stated that as much every single show we do, because we do end up being critical as well as praising the WSL. But we want to know worst case scenario. Do you even want to go there? Like, what's worst case scenario? Let me ask you this from a fan's perspective. In a perfect world, if whatever you wanted to see as a fan was going to get sponsored and get monetized, what would that look like? Would it look like what you're seeing now, or would you want to see a trimmed down?
I think the product needs to change a little bit. It was funny, this first event, you know, it's great now because we get this immediate feedback because of social media. And, you know, when Medina had his little meltdown, you know, like the commentary that was going on was really interesting from point of view of... he was whining about some decisions, and a couple of us old schoolers came back at that and went, these guys have never had to surf for points on the east coast of the USA.
Absolutely.
Or surf at 30-foot Waimea for points. None of these guys have ever known. We didn't care about the money. We cared about the points, and we had to do it, and we didn't whine. We turned up and smiled. If Fred Hemming said, you guys are going out there, yet you might die, we were out there. And the same, we'd go to the East Coast, and the conditions that we would compete in, they brought in the 1.5-foot rule. And I'm telling you, it got violated a couple of times. There's a famous event, the Wave Wizards. We had to have a boat go back and forth to actually make the wave legit, right? So they should stop whining.
Well, that, you know? To me, that speaks to Gabriel Medina's mindset,
But the capper on that is, and we didn't have any losers' heats. There was no second chance.
Right.
You turned up on the draw and you had to beat your opponent.
Right.
There was no I'll get through the next round. I'll be back in the mix.
Right.
There was none of that. It was straight up. It's on. You either beat the guy in front of you or you're out. I think they could shorten and they wouldn't have what happened at Snapper where they were forced to compete in marginal conditions. They could shorten the events right now by 2 days easily just by taking out the losers factor in both the men's and the women's. And as Sean Thompson famously said, losers rounds are for losers. And so I think they need to look at the format a little bit too. And then the second thing is if the thing was to collapse from a point of view of a financial point of view, I think what you're going to see happen is you're going to have your marquee events. Because this time the brands aren't going to come back and bail it out like they did 10 years ago. They can't. And they can't afford to. You're going to have... What I think might happen is you'll have a Grand Slam type format that's like in tennis or the majors like in golf. Where, you know, Bells is going to happen. Rip Curl's going to underwrite Bells no matter what. Right? For all intents and purposes, I don't think Hurley's going to give up Trestles and the Hurley Pro. And you know that the Pipe Masters is going to happen. If it's not Billabong, Vans is going to prop that one up.
The whole Triple Crown will happen.
Yeah, and Vans is going to prop that up. I mean, just look at Vans, what's going on with the company. I mean, the company's from success to success, and they understand that what they've done, you know, since Jay Wilson came along and reinvented the whole freaking brand on the marketing platform with Triple Crowns and all this other stuff, they've gone from strength to strength. So you could end up arguably with a... a Grand Slam tour that's Bells Beach, Southern California, and Hawaii, and then a bunch of other regional events, just like what happens with the PGA and the tennis tour.
Yeah.
That could happen. Yeah. I mean, that's what I would see would happen immediately, because they're not going to. I mean, you know, the word says that they lost about $30 million last year. Nobody's going to come in and underwrite $30 million. Sorry, there isn't.
Yeah. Yeah. Worst case scenario seems to be, sadly, I mean, I'm sure they did great and they've doubled the amount of people that are tripled the amount of people. They're not going to triple the amount of people. And I think they need to triple the amount of people just to get to where they could go to Ford and go underwrite it.
Mm-hmm. One of the scenarios that we've been advocating for, if the system does fall apart, is kind of doing away with the bottom 15 or 20 surfers. We'd rather see, even if it's a pay-per-view type event that we have to actually finance ourselves for $10 an event, I'd rather see the top four guys competing at 8 to 10 foot cloud break, maybe for a 4-hour window or something like that. I think that if the system were to fall apart, it would open up a lot of potential and creativity for events like that, where it's the heavyweights swinging for the fences,
UFC
basically.
UFC type stuff, Ultimate Fighter, man-on-man, think heavyweight boxing.
Where we don't necessarily have to watch Kai Otten surf against Adam Melling in the round two, you know, loser's round in knee-high slop.
Well, that's how the PGA works. I mean, you have the cutoff. I mean, if you just think of it for a second, there's a lot of golfers that tee off on the first couple of days that you've never even heard of. And unless you get to the cut, and every now and again we hear these nightmares, Tiger didn't make the cut, or, right, you know, Nicholson didn't make the cut, you know, like you could go to that kind of, it was kind of a little bit that way back in our day more, because it used to be, originally it was the top eight,
right,
and then it was the top 16. And they had a bunch of people, the fighter, all fighting it out till they got to the top eight or the top 16. I think the format we're currently in with losers rounds has run its course. I don't think the way the rankings so much needs to change. I mean, everybody has that kind of mindset, and I don't think that needs to change. But how many people compete needs to change. And what is the cutoff number?
I agree. And the like you said, the qualifying series, I'm into that too. And that can be something mm-hmm. separate that we market
well, every
differently.
Sport have that. Every sport has that.
Totally. And I'd love to see those guys. Even I love the Heath Joskies. I've been following mm-hmm. Wiggly Dantes this whole time. Like, I love those guys. But again, on the top upper echelon, we don't need to see those bottom 20 guys, I don't
think.
That's
why losers rounds need to go.
They do. And when you look at the...
because those guys would be out already. You wouldn't be seeing them again.
When you look at the stats for the viewing of the contest, you know, those heats are viewed at such smaller numbers than Kelly Slater and Gabriel Medina's heat in Chopu.
Or John Florence.
Totally. And so when the WSL is showcasing their stats to potential sponsors, they don't need those low-viewed heats anyways. It's not doing them any favors. It's not doing us, the viewer, any favors. So I think there's ripe opportunity for change.
Tom Curran versus Aki got better ratings than half those heats.
Right. I'm curious to hear your thoughts on Kelly Slater's mindset. Like, coming out of not winning world titles the last couple of years, going into this event, not only performing poorly at this event, but thinking that his heat was the third heat of the day rather than the first, coming in to switch equipment with 7 minutes left, having all these extracurricular things going on with Outer Known and Perps, all this uncertainty with the WSL's financial woes, like, where is Kelly at? What does it look like going into the rest of the year, going into Margaret's, which he's not particularly successful at, you know, what are your thoughts?
It would be a real shame if he just suddenly starts to back out too soon. I just feel that the tour needs him still at the moment, particularly in what we've been discussing here with the WSL. He's the marquee still. I mean, John might have beat him in the surfer poll this year, but more people still, when Kelly's heat's on, was at Snapper, the beach is just packed.
Right.
And as soon as his heat's over, there's a mass exodus.
Yeah.
And John comes down, there's a crowd, but it's not like, you don't feel this pressure, you know, you don't feel this. And I think that It would be a shame. Now, where his personal head's at? My God, he's 43 years of age. And look, I competed at a high level for 10 years. And I went from number 5 in the world in 79 to the next year, I think I was like number 44. My head just was not in it anymore.
Right.
My daughter was born, whose birthday is today.
Wow, happy birthday.
Rana, she's 35 today.
Nice.
And when she was born, my head was in another place. The one thing I do know, that Slater at an ability level is still at the level that he can beat anybody in just about any condition if he's got his act together within a 30-minute eat. I mean,
that's why I asked you that question about mental state, and you just alluded to it. After competing for 10 years, it's hard to keep your head in the game.
He's been doing it for over 20.
Exactly. And when you look at all of his extracurricular obligations, that makes me question his motivation. You know, that's why I'm asking.
Well, clearly, he doesn't need it from a financial motivation. Definitely. I mean, the guy's got houses everywhere. I wouldn't hate to know how many millions he's probably got stored away in the bank. I mean, I'm sure he doesn't need it financially. I don't think that him competing any longer, to be honest, really has a bearing on Outer Known. I mean, you just look at still the Jordan thing with Nike, and it's still Nike, one of Nike's most successful divisions, just the Jordan division.
Absolutely.
I mean, it hasn't shrunk, it's got bigger. Yeah. So Slater's a name attached to Outer Known as an icon. He's a Jordan type person that can drive a brand till he passes away.
Well, I think that's what he realized with Quiksilver, where it's like, I'm probably benefiting Quiksilver more than Quiksilver can really benefit me at this point, and that's why he's developing Outer Known. But I wonder if he comes to that conclusion with the WSL as well, where they're starting to make different decisions, like running in knee-high snapper.
You know, I think the truth will come out when we get to our first real wave, and that being either Cloudbreak, and it's 8 to 10 feet, or Chopu, and it's 8 to 10 feet, or at the end of the year at Pipeline. If all of a sudden he's getting beaten in those places, and because that really challenges him, he still prides himself. What do you think? He was still at the Vulcan Pipe Pro this year, and he got in the final. He didn't win, but he was freaking right in the mix till the very end, right?
Yeah.
And when he can't win in those conditions, that's when I think he's going to go, yeah. Because, you know, he pays a price when he surfs in those events. He doesn't get escape injury all the time. He gets slammed and gets hurt like everybody else. And when you're 43, coming back from that type of stuff, it hurts a whole lot more.
I know. Well, that's my only problem is I don't want to see him get beaten out of competition, which is what we've been seeing kind of. You know, I mean,
happened to Jordan.
I know. It's just I so don't want to see it, you know?
What was that team, Washington Wizards, he played for, right?
I want him to be like Seinfeld, you know, just like crushing it in the ratings.
I really would have loved to see him win a world title in the last 2 years and just have walked away. Said, I'm done.
I think we all want that.
Yeah.
That window is just passed.
It might have.
It's going to have. I want it to be this year.
If he doesn't get a result at Bell's, or at Margaret River.
Yeah.
And Bell's, he arguably can really be a contender. Open ocean isn't his favorite thing.
Yeah.
Like in Margaret River's open ocean. I mean, he's never had a real result at Sunset, ever.
Never. Yeah.
Right? And you know, they don't have CTs there, but he's never done well in all the big QSs, which most people, you know, compete in for the Triple Crown. And Margaret River's the same way as being at Sunset, only it's the left instead of a right.
Has Kelly won at Haleiwa?
No.
He's never won at Sunset.
The open ocean place. Pipe's not open ocean.
Oh, I know.
It's the one place on the North Shore where it just stands up on the beach and you're on the beach.
Yeah. Interesting. I forgot my line of questioning. I had a great question.
Was it about D-Bar?
the D-Bar conspiracy theory?
Yeah. I told you about my conspiracy theory.
Yeah, at
WSL does not want to lose Kelly or Mick in round two to those young upstarts freestyle.
Hey, all sports don't want to do that. The golf guys don't want to lose Tiger and not make the cut. They don't want to lose Nick.
But those sports already have blanket sponsorship. The WSL really needs eyeballs. like more than ever. And so to lose those two guys is to lose tons of eyeballs. So that's why they didn't have it at Deebon. I know you've argued that it's more than that. There's state politics, New South Wales, Queensland. I call BS on that, as I did with you on at RinCon, because you and I both know that if they want to move it to Deebon, they can. And they have in the past.
Well,
and they even threatened to do it this year.
Kieran Perreault makes that call, to be honest, and Jay Phillips was the other guy, the surf on-site, you know, guy to make the call with Kieran. I don't, be honest, Kieran's a pretty stand-up, straight-up sort of guy. I think
the conspiracy goes more to the, to somebody talked to Kieran and said, hey, look, here's what's on. We want you to know this is our side of the situation before you make your call.
I'm not saying that didn't happen.
Yeah.
But if Kieran had seen conditions at Durambar that he thought were contestable for them to run those heats, and I was around when some of those calls were being made, it was marginal, particularly at Durambar, because you start off in the morning, conditions are great, and as soon as that wind switches to the southeast, you know, it gets marginal.
Yeah.
And especially if the tide's going out, it gets really marginal.
Yeah.
You know, so I didn't see where they could get enough heats off to make it like a legitimate call. Just the infrastructure they were going to have to mount to what, run two heats or four heats? That's what's wrong with these events. They're too big, right? When they start the engine, they got to run eight heats at least. Otherwise, it's just a financial disaster.
Yeah,
to just turn the engine on.
You know, the WSL just redid some crazy warehouse in Santa Monica or whatever, and spent a lot of money on some. Have you been there?
Yeah,
is it beautiful?
It's amazing.
Did it cost a lot of money?
The TV studio is absolutely state of the art.
So they threw a ton of dough at this thing. Mm-hmm. It's kind of scary. It almost seems like pig on a lipstick. Like they're trying to kind of prop themselves up.
Lipstick on a pig.
Yeah, that too. Well, your thoughts on that studio and...
Bringing executives from big corporate companies to take a look at pro surfing, I'm sure it looks impressive.
Yeah, and that's the feeling
I get.
Which
is why it's in Santa Monica.
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
you know, entertainment
industry.
Yeah, because they can get a flight from New York to LA and you're straight there. You're what, 15 minutes from the headquarters from LAX.
What's the objective with the TV studio portion?
They're thinking forward about the production of all their own stuff and programming and they're actually looking forward.
Interesting.
They've got a Chinese mentality. We'll build it and it'll come.
Right. So would they be producing all that content for the webcast
and ABC TV delayed broadcast?
Got it.
Now they don't have to go sub that out. You know, yeah, there might be a bigger upfront cost to have built this studio to do this thing. I mean, I've been in there. It looks like the original day. I don't know if you ever went to the Prime Ticket Studios on Santa Monica Boulevard.
No.
When their Prime Ticket was huge and had the Lakers and the Kings and we had Bud Surf Tour and I used to have to go up and do it. It's as big as that studio, and that studio became, you know, Fox Sports West.
Well, that sort of bodes well. All of a sudden, I get a sense of optimism about the WSL that maybe they're going to... It feels like it's the fourth quarter and we're like 30 seconds left and they have to shoot and make a half-court shot. And maybe they've got the right guy, you know, with the ball in his hands here. I don't know, but I certainly hope it works out.
Well, I hope it works out for just the... for pro surfing. I mean, you know, it's interesting... You know, for me here, next year, 2016, is the 40th anniversary of Fred Emmings handing me that trophy out of the trophy cabinet in Honolulu. And it's 40 years. The sport has some real history now. There's a legacy. And I would hate to see it fall flat on its face going into an anniversary year that's 40 years.
Yeah.
You know, I think, if anything... We would hope that in that 40th year they can be super successful because they can probably leverage that to some degree and it may even help them, you know, from a point of view of the non-endemic category going, wow, surfing's actually been around for 40 years?
Yeah, and I'm sure they're looking at that as a storyline to build something up like that. I'm quite confident. Do you feel like an outsider when you talk with WSL people? Do you sense that... I've gotten a feeling from some Australian surf journalists that they feel like they're not welcome anymore. That you know, you as a core constituent, as a surf journalist in Australia, there was a much more open door with, say, Rab when Rabbit was running things, or even Brody Carr.
The journalists got away with a lot more.
Do you get a feeling? How do you feel about that? Do you sense
the sport had to grow up a little bit? I think I think it was a little too much bro down. Clearly,
can the sport lose its core constituent, its core fan, and still
not
survive?
If it has the best surfers in the world? The best surfers in the world, people want to see. Doesn't matter about the. I mean, I sense that now with, you know, like that bar that I hang out in at Huntington Beach, where we have happy hour heats when the broadcasts are on, right?
And how much money do you make at those?
I don't make any money except I get a bar tab. and we have this thing that I've instituted called Call Your Shot. At the top eight, you have to pick from each side of the bracket who's going to be in the final. I got it right for the first one of the year, Julian against Toledo.
So you did make some money.
You got a bar tab.
what are your kind of highest hopes with the way things currently look? I think some of the best women's competitive surfing I've ever seen took place at this event.
It's the best ever. It's not even close.
Not even close. I think Felipe Toledo looked absolutely unstoppable.
Well, I was telling Bassi the other day when we were on the beach, this is one of the dynamics, or my roommate Jeff Deffenbach, because we have a bet on every event for dinner, and there's an interesting dynamic this year that has never existed before, and there's a clear delineation between the 30-somethings and the 20-somethings. And the 20-somethings are coming, and a 20-something won last year, and all of a sudden they're going, all those 20-somethings going, we can be champ. We don't have to get beaten by these old guys. And even in this first event, you saw it by just look at the top eight guys. You had still a few of the Mick Fanning, Taj Burrow, right, hanging around. But all of a sudden there was more of the 20-somethings. And this has never happened.
No.
And there's clearly, the challenge is, can the 20-somethings step it up when the game gets serious at Cloudbreak, Chopu, and Pipe?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you know the veterans will. You know the veterans, they aren't scared because they've been there. They've been hurt.
Well, what's interesting with your scenario too is that our hopes, there might have been hopes pinned on somebody other than Kelly in the past, but it was one person. It was Dane once, and then it was John, or maybe Gabriel. But currently, there's 10 guys, some of whom's names we hardly know.
This theory will make you laugh. I also think for the 30-somethings, if Slater's not killing it, they're not inspired. Fanning has said in his last speech at the Australian Surfing Hall of Fame Awards, he says, as long as Kelly keeps doing it, I'm hanging in there.
Really?
What if all of a sudden he disappears? He's their inspiration. He's like 5 or 6 years in front of him in age, and all of a sudden he's thrown in the towel. They're all gone, wow, you know, like I am old. Yeah. And all of a sudden the 20-somethings just make a bull run on them all.
Right.
I think this is a critical year in that delineation between the 20-somethings and the 30-somethings.
I think North America viewers, fans of North American surfing need a hero, and we're lacking one.
And step up to the plate, Scott.
No, I'm And it's kind of a bummer.
We've only had two, Tom Curran and Kelly Slater.
Yeah.
When you really talk about heroes.
Yeah. And what are we going to do? Who's our next hero? I mean, is that important? Is that a storyline that needs to be discussed amongst WSL executives?
When you're trying
to sell the sport and Kelly leaves and it's some Australians and a Brazilian?
Well, there's another sport that's struggling with that, and it's tennis. It's been a long time since Agassi that there's been an American tennis hero. And it's owned by the Europeans these days, you know, and you know, I pay attention to that stuff on a much larger scale. From and tennis struggles with sponsorship in this country because there's no American heroes, there's no Agassi with his what was Canon cameras, or you see what I'm saying? Yeah. There's no hero that hero, you know.
How much is that going to affect what happens here in the next 8 months? I mean, even if you're Canon or Ford and you're like, yeah, we're interested in the WSL, and you know what, we do know Kelly's 43 and we do know he's not gonna, so can you tell us who's coming up next besides Kelly, and what does the WSL do? They say, oh, this Brazilian kid's ripping and there's 17 of them, you know.
But he's dropping F-bombs on the yeah. on the post show and he can't contain his emotions.
They have to figure out a tape delay for webcasts. Yeah.
Who's going to wave the flag so that Ford and Canon are happy? Or is it a situation where they're global companies and they love to see their market share grow in South America and in Australia? But it certainly would hurt the hopes of getting some sort of continued NBC or ABC TV deal if there's not this American hero to...
Well, we see it all the time in these other sports. When there's not an American contending for the title in golf or on tennis at the final thing, the ratings suck. As soon as there are... then it's different. Like, I mean, it's just when Tiger or Mickelson are killing it, the ratings are up. Those guys are out, ratings struggle.
Mm-hmm. Well, you want to change subjects a little bit, or you want to continue rapping on this?
No, go ahead.
Bethany Hamilton.
Yes,
she's been surfing pregnant, 26 weeks pregnant.
I saw the pictures on Facebook.
It seems wrong, and a New York, an NYU OBGYN has gone public and basically said it's probably not the right thing to do, that surfing 26 weeks pregnant is problematic. It can be problematic. Dave, your thoughts on this?
My question is, would you let your wife do this?
I think any New York OBGYN is willing to put their hands up and get publicity out of saying that that's wrong. So I don't know how medically sound that is, you know, and I'm sure there's others that would say it's fine. Would I let my wife surf pregnant? Yeah, totally.
26 weeks.
Dude, if she's longboarding, going straight to the beach, just having fun, getting in the ocean, I would think there'd be more benefit to that than detriment.
She wasn't longboarding.
Oh, she
was shortboarding.
Really?
With a pointy board, pointy nose.
It's a difference. Yeah, that's probably less safe.
And she's kind of a charger too, so.
Right.
That's Bethany, though. Look, I mean, that girl is the most incredible girl. I was fortunate at one time to have her in a coaching situation when she had just not long after she had recovered from the shark attack. And she came over to try out for the U.S. national team because she wasn't on the Hawaii team. And it's amazing, that girl's determination.
Yeah.
And in her mind... I think she would think that I don't think she went surfing where she was going to go try think I'm out at Pipeline ripping. She just went surfing to go surfing.
Right.
And I'm sure she wasn't ripping like Bethany Hamilton can.
Yeah.
And, you know, women know their bodies better than we do, guys.
Absolutely. That's a good point.
And if she thinks she can go surfing while she's that far pregnant, then... more power to her.
I'm on board with that. One person's name who we've never discussed on this show, but is well worth mentioning now, talking about goofy-footed, blonde-haired female surfers, Tatiana Weston-Webb.
Oh, yeah.
Was insane at this event. And she was on my radar last year, and she won the GoPro Challenge, I think, at Cloud.
And she's half Brazilian, by the way.
Oh, is she really?
Yes.
She looks 100% Aryan. You know, it's
her dad is full-on Aryan, no question. But okay. Mom is full Brazilian.
Wow.
Tanera. I know the family.
She is absolutely on fire.
Oh, yeah.
At this Snapper event, did you watch any of her surfing? She's unreal.
Yeah, and she's been unreal for a while in the ISA system. She's won a number of ISA world titles.
Yeah.
And she's been under the guidance of Rainus Hayes, one of the best coaches in the world. And she's just been waiting in the wings. And last year we saw signs of it when she was at Tavarua. She was, you know, showing people that coming from Kauai and the waves of Hawaii that she's got the goods. But she's also got the goods in little waves. I mean, she did well at the Hurley Australian Open too, and she can go both backside and frontside, and, you know, she's a contender that'll be there's no question, in my opinion, this year she'll be in the top 10. She won't have to qualify through the QS.
Is she 17 or 16?
No, she's a little older than that. She'd be 19.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'd like listeners to know that when I mentioned Tatiana's name and looked at Scott, he rolled his eyes, just for the record, because he hates women surfing. So.
I do not hate women surfing. I love surfing with women.
Yeah, exactly.
Dane Reynolds, is he going to... continue? Does he move the board short meter? Do kids go out and buy board shorts based on Dane Reynolds still? Is he valuable, or is he quickly spiraling? As I sort of sense.
Well,
that
we saw him dropping in the surfer poll. His popularity is waning. Again, proving that these days, because of the power of the webcast and stuff, that the tour is the tour, and the best surfers in the world are on the tour, and Dane's an incredible surfer, incredible talent, but I think that the era of the video surfer
yeah.
is becoming less and less important the more the WSL succeeds, because the eyeballs are being seen on the WSL audience like never before. Just that 2.5 million Facebook followers. Dane Reynolds not in that mix anymore. You can do your little videos and float them around and everything, but they're not reaching 2.5 million eyeballs. And at the same time, his relevancy has been driven by Quicksilver, because that's the only one they've got anymore. For the first time in history, Quicksilver does not have anybody in the top 10 on the world tour, and that brand was founded on that.
Yeah.
Dane took his own foot off his own gas pedal as well, though, because it was his popularity at the surfer poll, and his image was promoted through his videos on marinelayer.com or productions.com. And he no longer produces videos there anymore. So it's kind of like he stopped doing what he does best. He stopped caring, it seems to us. Therefore, I think we stopped caring. You know?
And the family's pregnant.
Right.
Well, we were seeing that as a hope that maybe he'll come back and get a new mindset and do something competitively here. And he just really...
He was in Coolangatta for the Quick Pro.
Yeah, and he looked horrible.
He looked like he was... doing a job.
Exactly.
I had to turn up because of Quicksilver obligations.
Yeah, poor me. But more importantly, to something you mentioned earlier about the WSL and the WSL eyeballs, David and I have often noted that they're doing a really good job of sort of promoting their own guys as free surfers. In other words, when there are lay days or we're between contests, they'll put stuff out of John Florence without a jersey on that Peter King does or whoever does it, of their top guys, but in a free surfing framework, so that you're like, oh, look, that guy's ripping. And it sort of takes away from those who's like the Craig Andersons.
I call them editorial chasers.
Yeah, that's what they are. And they've done a good job of doing that, so that I think every
brand has to have one of those guys in their portfolio.
John covers both for Hurley. And what I'm saying is that I think that now with the WSL doing what they're doing, like, you know, these guys can be both of those guys. John's both of those guys. He's a free surfer in my son's eye. Oh, no, yeah, he's competing today. I'm going to go watch him. And I think that the brands are seeing that, like you could say that with Mick and with Parco, that, hey, that free surfing footage of Parco Akira was insane.
Right.
And oh, by the way, now he's competing. And so I think that's an important thing to note.
Yeah, there was an interesting one on Mick Fanning warming up for Snapper, where he was, I don't know if you caught that one, and there was he was just killing it. I mean, and it was a free surfing video of Mick Fanning, who you don't really often see since the Eugene character went away.
Is the era of the free surfer, the Dave Rostovich, the Craig Anderson, is it done?
It's not done. It's just not as important. I mean, I think as a brand, you need that counterpoint, because not everybody is just, you know,
name me a free surfer that rings on your register, that moves your needle a little bit.
I got a weird one for you that clearly moves the needle. It's Alex Nost. He stays relevant all the time, somehow, some way, whether it's on these funky, like, shortboard fishes to longboards to go.
Is that internationally or is that regionally?
No, it's international. He was just at Noosa, and he comes down the beach and people know who he is. And, you know, like, they just had the duct tape invitational at the Noosa Surf Festival.
How many board short does he move the board short needle for Vans?
Or
the
Ruka.
For Ruka. Okay, it's for Ruka.
Yeah.
See, Do you think he sells stuff for them? Do you think that
Yeah, I do, for Ruka.
He has the power of...
For the position of Ruka as a brand, yeah, absolutely.
He's a perfect fit.
Yeah.
Is there another one? Are there some others that are relevant?
The relevant ones?
What about Craig Anderson or Clay Marzo? Do these guys move board shorts?
Well, you know, Quicksilver let Clay Marzo go, so he can't have been moving, you know? He can't have been moving the needle.
Who moves board shorts that's a free surfer besides Alex Nost?
That's a great question in that, you know, Rust has been with Billabong for what? Just 2 decades. And they still hang him in there, you know?
That's almost like Gordon's buddy, though. Gordon Murray. You almost get the sense that...
That's part of the deal.
He might move product in Australia. I don't get the sense that he moves product in the United States.
No, not in the United States.
Because you just don't see him in their ad campaign as much as he used to be.
Well, it's an interesting dynamic when we start talking about that. Is we have a new brand in that got breakout brand of the year in the SEMA Awards, Vizsla, and they don't have a top-notch pro surfer. Their whole crew is editorial chaser, what we call them, the hipster movement. Yeah. The hipster movement, right? I don't think they can do that forever. I think they're going to have to step up at some point in time if they want to take that next step into the global branding world.
Yeah. Do you think that Mark Healy moves product
for Depactus?
Well, these guys are all going on in this different tack. One of the things is that for a young brand now to come out of the gates and try to actually buy one of these WCT top 10 guys, it's near impossible.
Yeah.
So they got to grow the brand with an eclectic team, a mishmash of past champions. Maybe there's a growing there somewhere. You know what I mean? The way that you do it is different to how it used to be done.
So you get those guys on your team just knowing, look, it's more of a marketing play that we don't expect you to really move the board short needle, but we do need to have somebody that projects our image and our values as a company, and you're that guy. And we'll hang with you until we get somebody else.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's not rocket science in that the best surf teams in the world right now are Hurley and Rip Curl. No question. Both brands seem to be doing all right. You don't read any bad reports in the financial news about they're going out of business, their stocks at one. You know what I mean? And yet the both of those things, if they had a manufacturer's championship in the WSL, which I suggested, just like in Formula One motor racing they have, you know, Ferrari wins it or McLaren wins it, it'd be battle right now between Hurley and Rip Curl, like full on.
Yeah,
like way out in front.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
And yet those brands seem to be healthy.
Yeah, the interesting thing, I haven't really thought about that Vizsla example, but that is a interesting point, because they don't actually even have really a marquee rider, whereas John could be argued for Hurley and Julian maybe to a degree. But it's like they have a bunch of middle-of-the-road guys who all kind of represent...
They actually have a couple of guys I'd never even heard of. Yeah, but then I thought I was pretty plugged in.
But they all add value to the team, like the South African, Brendan Gibbons, mm-hmm. and then Eric Geiselman, and then
in Australia,
Richards.
They've got Nat's youngest son, Bryce.
Bryce,
I just surfed with him the other day.
That guy's a player.
He's ripping.
Yeah, but he was surfing in the duct tape on a longboard.
Yeah. But so all those guys add value to different aspects of what they're doing and to different markets around the world, I suppose, but without really a marquee guy to hang their hat on, which is an interesting strategy. Like you said, they didn't really go after somebody who is on the competitive track, you know, a little bit of a different model, I guess.
But I think you can only grow that model so far.
Yeah, I agree with you. You need the best surfers in the world at some point.
Right.
Yeah.
The kids still care about the best surfers in the world.
Yeah, totally.
Do you want to do a kook and a duke and a musty moment and move through this?
I've got them. At the end of every show, we do the kook of the week and the duke of the week. Feel free to think of one if you want while we're delivering ours. My duke is actually the Brazilian contingent currently on tour, and that includes Silvana Lima. Because, to Peter's point, they're hitting us from all angles.
You're not allowed to do whole groups of people.
I am allowed to do whole groups of people. By the way,
it's actually a good call.
I've got the mic in my
hand. Bullshit on both of you.
So I've got PT on my side and the listenership on my side. So Scott, simmer down. I'm going to turn off your mic. Listen, Scott, hear me out, dude. Wiggly Donta, we've got a Brazilian who goes toe-to-toe with every aspect of our sport. Wiggly Dantes goes toe-to-toe with Nat Young. The way that we saw Nat Young come in and just go methodical backside attack, Wiggly's doing it better than Nat did it when Nat did it. We've got Adriano, who I'm not a huge fan of, but is so freaking tenacious, it's undeniable.
Determination's
like,
crazy.
I hated watching him beat Fanning, but he smoked Fanning. Shut up, dude. What? And then we got Felipe Toledo, who just on ability alone, I was rooting for Julian.
Can you just start singing the Brazilian national anthem for me? Because
it's undeniable, Scott. It's absolutely undeniable. Then, so, like I said, and then you got Gabriel Medina, the world champ. Felipe, the talent that we've never seen before. Silvana Lima on the women's side is going to take it to all of them. Doing airs, her power. Like, she was these carves.
Posters of Savannah.
These carves.
Since you have posters in your room.
She does that club sandwich turn at one point. Plus, she has the tenacity of Adriano without any of the financial support, which says something about her character that I don't see out of any American surfers and not a lot of Australian surfers, not a lot of Hawaiian surfers. So, Brazil, I've got to say, I'm looking at them for this. And I think, and the no-name guys, by the way, Italo, Ferrer coming out of nowhere, taking out Slater. It's just like their plan of attack is from every angle. It's full charge. I don't want to love them. I'm kind of falling in love with them. It's undeniable. So my Duke of the week is Brazil.
Okay.
Woo!
That's pretty good. I'm going to stick to the format that I created in the Duke and the Kook, which is a single person, not a group of people. And my Duke Kahanamoku of the week is Felipe Toledo. And we all know why.
You just made that up.
I did not. It's right here. Scratched it out. Yeah, right. I was going to say Harley Ingleby because I was just so disgusted with your Brazilian wave flag waving. But now I'm going back to Felipe Toledo.
Why?
Because he looked incredible. He surfed great. He looked like a professional. He acted like a professional. By the way, should Gabe Medina be fined? And if so, how much?
Well, Gabe Medina is getting my kook of the week for not thinking about before he's opened his mouth. I think he has to realize that as the reigning world champion, you can't do any more like that. That conversation could have been had with the head of the judging panel up on the stands behind the scenes, but you can't come out publicly anymore and criticize like that. You can't do that in other sports. I mean, there's been no repercussions yet that we've heard of, right? If somebody had done that in the NBA or in the NFL, there would already be a serious fine laid down or a suspension.
And they fined Jeremy and they fined Freddie P in the past and, of course, Bobby Martinez. If you were in charge, how much would you fine and why? Or sanction or suspend?
I think he's been pretty much a model citizen up to this point. I think it's a hefty financial fine. And you're on notice that you do that again, then it's I don't think they should suspend him this first time out. To your point, they can't afford to not have the world champ in these events right now. They need the world champ. So serious, like fine, like 50-100 grand, like a real, the biggest one ever. Yeah. You know, I think the biggest one ever has what been 25. I think that's the biggest one. I think, but it has to be twice whatever the biggest one up to this point was.
What was the 25 for?
I thought that Flores got 25 on top of the suspension.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I think so.
Wow, brutal.
My kook of the week is Dane Reynolds. For all the all the reasons that we mentioned, that he just looks lackluster. He looks like he doesn't care. On top of that, I had hoped that him being pregnant would help, you know, motivate him and turn him around, and it hasn't. And by the way, his post-heat interview was horrible. He basically said, "I mailed it in. Whatever. Maybe I won't be doing these anymore." Like that stupid chuckle. And so Dane, it's probably been my kook of the week more than 5 or 6 times. Dane Reynolds. Must-see moment?
Nope. Oh, I got a dude. Kook. So my kook actually is Gabriel Medina as well. And
You can't do that.
No, look at it. I had it written down, dude. But what's that? What's
change.
That? On my notes.
You gotta change.
From before I even came here. So it is Gabriel, but I'm not personally offended by the things that Gabriel said. The reason why Gabriel's my kook is he's shooting himself in the foot. Gabriel has been fighting against the stereotype of being the bad guy who's going to dethrone Kelly Slater and Mick Fanning. And I heard that when he accepted his award at the Australian banquet, the WSL banquet before the event, I heard that he gave a really moving speech.
And I was there.
How was it?
What, it was incredible.
What did he say?
Just the emotion and what it meant to him, his family, and his country.
Right.
And the way that he presented it, very eloquently in his broken English. It had, the place was silent, and he spoke for quite a while, like maybe 6 or 8 minutes. And you couldn't hear a pin drop. People were, and he was engaging, and he got a standing ovation at the end of that speech.
Really? Wow.
David was there standing and ovating.
from afar, actually. I was in my living room clapping, slow clap. But I heard that Gabriel won a lot of fans with that speech.
Absolutely.
Where it's like, even if you criticize, like he finally won people over who weren't willing to get on board prior. Well, then he does this post-heat interview, and like I said, shoots himself in the foot. Any fans that you collected from that speech, he just threw out 50% of them by behaving this way. So Gabriel's my kook simply because he needs to get out of his own way. Let your surfing do the talking. And by the way, Glenn Hall beat you fair and square.
Absolutely.
So let's not overlook that detail. And if that happens, shut up and train harder and try again when it comes to bells. Done.
So I haven't done a Duke yet.
Go ahead.
My Duke is just going to like, Bassie's not going to like it at all.
Good.
My Duke award goes to Silvana Lima.
The Duke Hanamoku goes to Silvana.
I love her.
Because she has come back from a lot of like setbacks. I mean, she was on the tour at a very young age. Everyone was scared of her. Couldn't figure out who she was. Couldn't speak English that much. No one paid any attention. She was in the mix for a while, and then she fell out of the mix, and she had a serious injury. She had to have knee reconstruction that took 2 years to get back from, and then she had to finance her own way around the girls' WQS, which is expensive, all right? And now she's back in the mix, and she's all smiley face. She's speaking better English, and she is dangerous. I mean, she is going to cause people trouble all year long, and I think she'll be on tour as the sage veteran. She's the only 30-something on the girl's side. How many? We got 10 or 12 men in their 30s, right? She's the only woman, and I think what she's done deserves a Duke Award.
I agree.
Good one. And I'll say that, you know, my must-see moment, I'll just tag on that Gabe has firmly put the black hat on the head, which I think is great for the sport. All sport needs a villain, and Gabe is our villain, and or at least he's my villain. He might not be your guys' villain. But my must-see moment is there's an advertisement of Gabe Medina in Brazil where he's man-grooming his underarm hair, and it's for Gillette, and it's just it's actually a must-see moment that you probably shouldn't watch. It's quite disturbing.
Must-not-see moment.
Yeah, must-not-see moment, exactly. So that's my must-see moment.
It's actually strangely related to my must-see moment, which is a new website I found called KellySlateHair.com. Like Kelly Slater, but it's Kelly Slate Hair. I'm going to click and open this up for you, Scott Bass. Somebody devoted an entire website to Kelly Slater's hair.
Wow.
With different wigs that they photoshopped on. You know, a little, he got a mullet. He's got like all sorts of stuff. So
that's pretty good. There's Kelly, some funny shit on there.
KellySlateHair.com. Right. Check it out. Must see moment.
My must see. Do I have a choice on that?
Yeah, please chime in.
My must see is you need to buy a copy of Becoming Westerly and read the story of.
Is it out?
Yes, I just read the whole book.
Oh, I think
Jamie
Brissick is the journalist.
I talked to Jamie about it. It came out in July in Australia.
I bought it on the new in the bookstore the very first day I was in Australia,
okay.
In Cronulla.
It comes out here in a couple months,
right.
I think.
Is it a good read?
It's very disturbing.
But tell me,
and at the end of it,
I was concerned that Jamie was too close to Peter, to Wendy, did he...
No, he did a very good... He did a really good job journalistically.
Because I know he was very... He was close to...
But after I finished the book, because I mean, I've known Druin since I was a teenager. I traveled. I've roomed with the guy.
And to me,
he'll always be Druin.
Too bad.
No matter what, his delusional...
Yeah.
Delusional presentation. He talks about Peter Druin from a Westerly point of view in the third person, yeah. And how now that he's Westerly, he's going to be this star of stage and screen at 65.
Yeah.
And at the end of it, you get to the end, and it doesn't end other than that you feel like So he cut his dick off, and did he make any money?
Yeah.
That's how I ended up feeling. That's how I ended up feeling. Maybe I'm way too close to it all.
Yeah.
But to me, Druin was one of Australia's greatest surfers of that generation.
Yep.
As good as Nat and Midget. No question he was as good as Nat and Midget.
Yeah.
And I might be a little partial because he's a Queenslander, but the fact was he was the greatest surfer to come from Queensland in that generation.
Yeah.
Wow.
I was concerned that it would look like a reach for attention from Peter. Like
that's people, nothing new.
Well, that's my
point.
He's
been a drama queen all his life.
Yeah, but so why feed into that? Like, I would suggest to you that I don't know, but people that go through gender operations probably want to be left alone. You know, like, they're not necessarily...
He beat Bruce Jenner to the punch.
Barely.
So it'll be interesting to read it, for sure.
It's a must read. It's a must read.
All right, well, that's all we had got for you to this week on Down the Line and Surf Splendor Podcast. You can reach David at hello@surfsplendorpodcast.com. And you can reach me, Scott, at surftalksandiego@gmail.com. And PT, thanks so much for coming in. We enjoy your always welcome here on the show with your great insights.
It was great debate, mate.
All right, until next time, adios and aloha.
Peter Townend, ladies and gentlemen, 1976 world champion, all-around good bloke, and an honor to have on the show. Thank you, Peter, for joining us, and Scott, as always, for helping me host and try to derail this thing on me every week. And thank you to you, the listener, as always, doing your part. We don't ask much. We ask that you share the show, write a review on iTunes if you get around to it, and we're grateful for all of that, just helping build the community. Another way to participate in this Surf Splendor community would be to join in the Fantasy Surf team. I have no incentive for you to do that. I think it's just fun. I like competing, and I really want to win that thing, and I'm so mediocre at it that it drives me nuts. All right, well, you can find everything you need related to this episode on surfsplendorpodcast.com, as well as a link to the Fantasy Surf thing and PayPal and all that sort of stuff. And then, of course, follow on social media at Surf Splendor. And I think that's it. So this is your host, David Scales. Until next week, signing off, encouraging you to catch a couple of waves, and saying shred on.